You have just entered the Katie Ma Podcast.
Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome to episode 296 of the KB Mod Podcast. It is October 8th, 2017. And we are here with you again. We're in October. Second week of October. And the whole crew's here. I think you may have heard, Brandon, I'm flying blind on this, but I'm thinking that there may have been a little bit of a sound, an old school sound that will bring people back to the days of simpler times on the internet, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it was just, it's an audio trigger that for some people will be instantly recognizable, and for others, they will wonder what it is. Like, you wouldn't know what it is if you are of a certain age.
Right.
And so I wonder if KD knew what it was, but he wouldn't have heard it.
Yeah, I did not hear it, but I can... I already know what the service is, and I've not used it, so there's no way I know what the sound was.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it dominated the news this week, so it felt appropriate to go a little old school with this cast and sign in the way that the way that we used to back in the day.
Absolutely. There's a lot of nostalgia around that sound. We're gonna get into that a little bit later once we get into the news and talk about our good friend AOL Instant Messenger. Bidding us adieu, but let's save the tears for a little bit later. Let's talk about how our week's been. How are all you guys doing this week? Any exciting developments before we get into what we've been eating and what we've been playing? What have you guys been doing? Katie, let's start with you. What have you been doing? You've been working, you've been grinding. How's it going?
You search the bottomless barrel of notable things I've done this week and, come up empty. No, it's just been same old week, you know. Okay. Work is still, I feel like the more I'm struggling more at work, and I don't think it's like, maybe it's me just getting more upset by the little things. Maybe it's me just going insane, or maybe things are legitimately getting worse. But I mean, work is just getting a little, right now. There was one funny interaction. There was like a husband and wife that came in the store, and the husband was like she bought like movies for his wife, and she's like, "Oh, thank you, honey," and puts her head in his shoulder, and he goes, "Oh, it's no problem. You owe me a blowjob later." Like, loud in the middle of the store, and that was an eyebrow raiser, and it was funny because it didn't feel like he was kind of like humiliating her. It felt like, you know, something they joke about a lot, so it wasn't like he's being a dick or anything, but it was like, what do I say in that context?
Dang,
and it was like,
just kind of act like you didn't hear it or maybe didn't get it.
Yeah, just kind of
should have jumped in and said, "What do I get later?"
It's a form of currency, so it's a form of payment. So, and he's walking away. I'm like, "All right, have a good day." And he goes, "Trust me, I will."
Dang! What a smooth operator.
Man. Yeah, he was.
I mean, I guess you got to do something to keep it exciting after that long.
Yeah,
that's right. Great. Yeah, keep it. You know, keep the excitement. Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. All right.
But yeah.
So feeling a little burnt at work, but, you know, it sounds like you're getting these little tidbits of an incredible interaction with the
interesting it sounds like interactions like that. I mean, that'll carry you through the week.
You know, my week's been really good. My week's been really good. Nothing too crazy. A lot of football today. Celebrated my brother's birthday on Saturday, and this will kind of bleed a little bit into what I've been eating, but I went to this place he lives in Jersey, and there's a couple locations I think they have of this place, but we went to the Jersey location. It's called Destination Dog, and it's a hot dog and sausage place. It's not like
I was wondering for a second if that was like what kind of establishment this was, and it could have gone either way.
It's not a kennel. It's a hot dog and sausage place, and they have all kinds of crazy combinations and sausages and hot dogs. It's really, really good. But it was my second time there. And anyway, celebrated his birthday. I had the let me actually find the menu so I can tell you exactly what was on it. But that was a good time. I think there's one in Philadelphia as well too. But they have like all kinds of different sausage. You can get like kangaroo, you can get python sausage, snake sausage. But they also have like just a lot of like normal classic stuff too. But I got the, they have a Vietnamese dog that is, let me read it to you. It's the Bun Mi Vietnam dog. It's Cantonese sausage with shaved foie gras, pickled vegetable, fresh jalapeno, sriracha mayo, and cilantro. Let me tell you, it was so, so good. Oh. And anyway, I actually put the menu in chat for people if you want to take a look. But
okay.
This place is really good. It's actually really reasonably priced as well. They have really good. They also have this thing called a Dutch egg. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before. But it's sausage that is wrapped around an egg that is then the sausage is then wrapped in or kind of dipped in like a breading and then deep fried. And so the idea is that the egg cooks just till it's the yolk is a little bit runny, and then you cut the egg down the middle, and the yolk is super runny with the sausage and like the breading on the outside.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Yeah, they serve it with pickled or like these onions that I'm not sure exactly what they do with them. They're almost like pickled in texture, but they're really sweet. And then with some nice mustard, and then pickles on the side. The Dutch egg was fantastic.
Oh. So I'm looking it up now, and it's saying that, like, yeah, there's food and then also retro video games. Did you try any of those?
Yes, they do. They have, like, an arcade area. They had Blitz.
Ooh.
They had a – what did they have? They had some – oh, what else did they have? They had a Street DDR? Fighter machine. Did they have – I don't think they had DDR. I don't think they had DDR, unfortunately.
Worthless.
It wasn't a huge – it wasn't, like, a huge arcade area, but they had a few different machines. But, yeah, that was really cool. Good. It was a good place, so – again, I'm not generally someone that's like, I mean, like, you know, I like a hot dog on occasion, like everybody else, but, and also I'm someone too, you know, how I like to preach, especially too, when it comes to burgers, you don't want to go too over the top with toppings because you kind of, you know, you'll lose, a lot of times you'll lose like the whole substance of what you're trying to eat. You know, a burger that has like 15 things on it, I'm like, what am I even eating at this point? It's just a hodgepodge. This place does a good, I mean, I would say that they probably max out. Some of these have a little more than I would like on them, but they max out around like 4 or 5 toppings, usually including with like a sauce. So they kind of do it really right. And I haven't had a bad one yet from going. So some real, real good ones. Like, man, the Texas one is the Howlamo, and it's wild boar sausage with pork belly, chicharrones, baconese, and scallions on it.
Oh,
so good.
Fancy stuff.
Yeah. It sounds really fancy, but it's really like when you go there, it's like, the dogs are really modestly priced. It's not anything too crazy.
That's what I like, is a place that it seems like they have really nice ingredients, but it's not, yeah, it's not like it's double the price of a hot dog you'd get somewhere else or something.
Nope. Yeah. They're really reasonable, and they're like big dogs too. Like if you get one, it's, you know, it's going to fill up your mouth. Let me tell you, it's a big dog. So,
you know, all that being said, I just want to thank you for, like, because I'm definitely going to be using the name, you know, Python Sausage, Wild Boar Sausage. Those are great Steam names.
Those are good Steam names. No question. Python Sausage is amazing. Yeah. So anyway, did that on Saturday. Been getting, now that I'm back, it's funny. I'm really back into, being back in the Philadelphia area, I was, you know, growing up, I was a big sports fan. But when I migrated and moved out to LA for like 4 years, didn't follow sports and didn't care about anything happening on the West Coast. So now that I'm back and around family, it's like, you know, football and baseball season and all that stuff is back. So the Eagles have been doing quite well this year, 34-7 against the Cardinals today. The Giants are 0-5. They lost today. The Cowboys, unfortunately, Brandon, we're talking about in the pre-show. We're beaten by Green Bay. So we're the top of the division, and it's a good time to be an Eagles fan right now. So I can't complain. So I shouldn't even say that out loud because I'm so superstitious, because I know next week we'll probably, you know, who knows, Carson Wentz will go down and everything. It'll be like, you remember when you said it's a good time to be an Eagles fan? And I'll be like, why did I say that out loud? I'm an idiot. But, pretty good week for me. All things considered. What about you, Yang? What have you been up to?
So, this past week, at the museum, we were doing an exhibition changeover. So two of our collections change over with collections from other museums. And this one I thought was interesting, given the I've always kept what I do online very separate from what I do in my work life. And now there seems to be this natural intersection between the two, because currently we are hosting an exhibition that's on the history of personal computers.
Nice.
And it's very interesting because this gentleman who's curated this this collection has computers going all the way back to the early 1970s. that are fully functional. He encourages people to use them, interact with them, and see what they feel like. And so he has like an Apple II. He has like original Atari consoles. He has like all of these wonderful like machines that are in perfect working condition. And so it's just that's been something that's been occupying my time a lot. Probably not in the correct way at work. It's just I get distracted every time I go through that collection. But cool. I mean, it's wild. Some of the things that he has in there, like trying to think of consoles that that he doesn't have his collection. I can only think of one, which is the Panasonic 3DO.
Oh wow, the 3DO.
Oh no. Yeah.
But everything else I could possibly think of is part of that collection. He has like this old software library, like even things like he recreated a 1980s computer store, which of course we don't see anymore. But even like I forgot all the little things, like even like looking at this huge shelf of PC game box art. I was like, I forgot what it felt like to even look at this kind of stuff because we're so used to seeing it digitally. Yes. And like all of the old, like there, Dune 2000 was on there, the original Dune, and like all of these games that I just completely forgot. But Leisure Suit Larry is in there. Like it's
That was so scandalous, man.
Yeah, it was. And so like even just like those that the whole collection has just been a crazy trip, even for me. I mean, I'm not super versed in all of that. I mean, I recognize maybe a computer from like the late 1980s that's in there, and that's towards the end of his collection. So, it's been really cool seeing visitors come in and just go on this to actually from a different perspective, see someone go through this wild nostalgic trip as they walk onto this floor and they're like, oh my God, I had this computer when I was a kid, or, oh my, you know, I had one of these when it first came out and I thought it was so cool. And to see them like get back on that computer and basically relive that part of their life is like, it's an ongoing experience. It's super cool to see that. Awesome. And what's interesting too, is that it's not part of the exhibition yet, but, there's another part of it. It's sort of its counterpart that's going to be addressing video games in a more modern context, and the people who want to put the exhibition together want to do a section on Twitch.
Oh, cool. Really?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And so they want to sort of establish how video games are being brought to people today in comparison to what this exhibition is doing, and when it was like, you know, the old consoles, living room experiences, and they want to create the second part to that. And so it's funny because, as I was saying, like, as I keep most of my online life and my work life very separate, some people at work are familiar at least with what I do in terms of streaming and all of that stuff. Yeah. And so now it's interesting because now our exhibitions team is asking me like, oh, what would be required for us to do like a live stream, and, how does Twitch actually work? And like, so it's just an interesting intersection of like these two things that I've always kept separate, but, I'm interested to see how that exhibition is going to move forward. But
you're the subject matter expert now.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
That's all
the answers. So that's mostly what I've been doing. I've been busy with work and then getting distracted by this, maybe I think my favorite exhibition that we've had at the museum. And basically what an experience it is to just watch people go through this wild roller coaster nostalgic trip as they see all these old computers from earlier in their life.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm sure I would be exactly one of those people as well. The nostalgia would just overtake me. Like even just like you said, when you went to a store or whatever, like it feels like 100. I mean, I know I've been alive 100 years, but it feels like a lifetime ago that you would go into a store and browse PC titles in the boxes. Like that doesn't, it just, you don't even do that. I mean, you might do that maybe at like a thrift store or something like that. But anything that you're going to browse now, if it is sold for PC, is it even a disc? It'll probably, you open it up and it will tell you to go to the website or something. I don't even think they do that anymore. I can't really think of many examples.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if they even have PC games. It's all digital now, right? It's all Steam. It's all cards. And even console things. You go, like, I went and got, what did this happen for? This happened with, some PlayStation 4 game. I went and, cause I was like, man, I gotta go to GameStop to get it. And people are like, why are you going to GameStop?
Oh.
You realize that you literally, yeah, I know that will trigger you, Katie. But like you're literally gonna go buy it. You're gonna put the disc in And then it's just going to, it's like you can just get the same experience from downloading it from the store. And I was like, well, I want the physical thing. I want to have the manual. And then I went and I got it and I unshrink wrapped it. And I was like, oh, they don't even make manuals anymore. It's literally just a fucking disc in a piece of plastic.
It'll be the disc and then the instructions, like the controls, will be on the back of the slip. Yep.
It is. And then you put it in and then it downloads a massive update anyway. And I'm like, what? I was like, and that was it. I was like, never again. Yeah. I'm like, why would I ever go get a physical copy of anything? Cause you really don't need to anymore. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm totally with you. That's crazy. That's neat though, that it's intersecting, Yang, you know?
I mean, oftentimes
be their expert.
Yeah. I will say, like, if you're exclusively on console, I'll say, like, oftentimes, like, buying it physically, like, whether, you know, being used, it'll be a lot cheaper. And then you have the option of, like, selling it once you're done with it, which you can't really do digitally. So,
yeah,
like, exactly. It's still that appeal. But, yeah, that's true. It's becoming less and less more, like, important with all the, like, day one updates, patches, like, shipping, unfinished games. Yeah, you're right. But listen, dude, have you seen this fucking Final Fantasy XII, the Zodiac Age physical? Look at this. Ooh, wait for it. Don't do it. Audio listeners, I just took off the sleeve for my edition. I gotta pick up my mouth again.
It's definitely a lost art. Like when you would open like a new CD or and see the like the inlet.
Audio listeners, Katie is dropping game boxes all over his room.
Katie now showing us the positive side of not having to keep a whole bunch of physical media in your house.
It was my pop figures that just started falling.
Sort of a caveat to that. Part of what they want to do for this Twitch section of the exhibition is they want to have some Twitch streams running live in the exhibition all the time. Mm. And the first thing they asked was, what about that guy that you, like that larger community that you, that you're a part of? Do you think we could have a history mon? And it's a family museum.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry, Scott. My actual answer was, oh my fuck, no.
I'm so, yay! That's so much exposure for me. How could you?
Come on, dude.
How could you? I totally understand. I would hope that would be your only response. Like, you don't want to lose your job over that.
No, and I was saying things like, oh, no, we got to find, like, the family-friendly channels on Twitch. Like, I'll plug, like, the Extra Life official channel and things like that, because they actually have rules for how that runs.
I can't even imagine.
The only thing I could think of is mom and her five kids coming through the museum. Oh, and the first thing they hear is some of the discussions that you have on your stream.
Yeah, there's no way. Oh my God.
We're talking about massive rebranding there. Like you could start a stream right now and just be completely welcome everybody to the APL, and you start seeing things like what's this emote for APL nut? What's the meaning behind this picture?
I was gonna say too, because first thing, you know what, Ying, you could have told me and then let me prepare, and I would have just the days I'm on. I'm going to be so PG, dude. We're going to be so clean. Oh, I know there's actually zero chance I could even sustain that, even for maybe like an hour.
Yeah.
Please play like a non-prime game of CSGO trying to be like PG. Yeah. Like, oh, darn it.
No, let me tell you how strict this is. They don't even want streams that have CSGO.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. Well, yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
You got to stream Galaga? I'm going to hook you up with like Cook Serve Delicious or something like that, and you got to not get frustrated.
Right, yeah, no, there's no chance. Okay, well, that's hilarious, though. That's great. That's great.
SpongeBob?
All right, well, what about you, Brandon? How's your week going?
It's going good. Pretty much same old thing. Nothing too crazy. Been working a lot this week, and then got to play some games this weekend, so
nice.
Can't complain. Had a nice chicken and rice dinner before the cast, so
was that your own making, or was that from?
Of
the
course lady? Not. Oh, no, okay. Hillary made it. She made it in an instant pot, like the pressure cooker thing, which seems to make pretty good food. I don't know how to use it, but apparently it's easy.
That's guy. Yeah, I was just, you know what? I should only know that when you're cooking for yourself, you eat fish that's been in your freezer for a year plus. That's the trigger. That's when I know.
Did you ever
tell her that you did that? And what was her reaction? Or did she not know yet that you cleaned out the fish? I'm curious.
I think I did tell her, but, I don't remember her reaction. I think it was sort of the mild disgust that you.
Okay.
You know, that you displayed when I told you, it was kind of, but also the discussion from with me and her is like, well, look, how else are we going to get rid of this stuff? Like, I'm trying to do a public service here. Right. So,
right. No, I think her mild disgust is linked to our mild disgust of, you could have just thrown it out. I mean, I don't think anybody would have judged you.
I mean,
to be fair, you didn't waste it.
I'm just trying to be a good citizen. You know, each day we throw away hundreds of pounds of food, you know, in our own households, and you know, we don't like it. If maybe I don't recycle all the time, like, this is my penance, right? This is the one thing I can do, is try not to waste food that is still technically edible.
Yes. I mean, it is technically edible. And I guess we didn't really get into,
I will mention, okay, there is, I was at the store last weekend, uh-huh. maybe, and I was getting like some eggs and stuff, so just normal stuff, right? And the only thing I really make on the weekends are eggs, or, you know, like maybe biscuits or toast, like breakfast type stuff. And so I was just like thinking in that mindset of, I'd like some breakfast food. And and I was like, oh, I'd like sausage. Now, sausage, this is how dumb this story is. Sausage is really easy to cook, right? I can cook sausage. It's the only annoyance is that, like, you get your hands all dirty and stuff with the raw meat, but sausage is really easy to cook. So normal me, like, I should have just gone and gotten, like, the sausage that you can either put in the fridge or put in the freezer and save it. And you get it out and you make it. I was like, I was in the frozen food section already. And I was like, oh, I could grab some frozen sausage. It was actually inedible.
It was awful.
I actually could not eat it.
No.
It was the worst frozen food I've ever had.
Oof.
Actually don't know. Like, I did all of it according to the instructions, right? Put it in a paper towel. You have like four of them. You cook it for like three or 4 minutes in the microwave or whatever. Yep. It was not edible.
Ugh.
And so that just basically told me that, like, there are certain things. This is why I stick to Hot Pockets, right? I stick to known quantities. It's not incredible food, but every single one of them is edible. This sausage was trash. I wasted whatever, $4 or $5 on this sausage that I literally can't eat. And I still have the few of them in my freezer. Because I figure I might as well try it again just to see if they're like, if those are also inedible, right? Maybe try the other way you can heat them up or something. But it was actual garbage.
Yeah. Dang. That's rough. So you went so I have dealt with frozen sausage in the past, and no, generally it can be very awful. So you went the microwave route, I'm assuming. Is that what you're describing?
Yeah.
So I generally, if I'm going to use frozen sausage, I will thaw them and then go like just on a pan, like on a grill pan on the stove. It's not that much better, but you can get them a little more. I don't know. I tend to find that the microwave, especially.
Well, that's maybe what I will try. Like, I'm going to see if maybe changing how I heat them up makes it edible. But it was, I was shocked at just how bad it was. Yeah. I didn't actually eat them. I had to throw it away. No, I do have standards in some sense.
I was going to say, this shows, I mean, you know, we questioned it a little bit after the year-old fish, but you know what? You said no to the sausage. It was so awful. So,
I'm trying to let you know that I do have standards, low as they may be, because I'm sure it probably was edible and it had already been cooked, right? I wouldn't have died from eating it. But it was, I mean, it was basically, I couldn't really even chew through it very well. So.
Gotcha.
So that was a miss. Okay. You know? And I learned, right? Sausage is super easy to cook. Like, raw sausage, I can do that, even with my limited cooking skills. So next time I will just get normal sausage cooked with eggs.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right, well, you know what? Roll us right in from horrible sausage into what you've been playing this week, Brandon. What, you said you played some games this weekend. What games did you participate in?
Mostly I played, I planned to play more than I actually ended up getting to play. I downloaded the Battlefront 2 beta just because I was told that it was like visually very, very pretty. And I was like, oh, that would be, you know, that'd be a cool thing to try out with my new monitor and all that. Mm-hmm. See how that looks, you know, see how it runs. I'm not that interested in the game, but I thought I'd give it a shot. And so I downloaded it. It's like 22 gigs. And I haven't actually gotten a chance to play it. So maybe I'll try and play it after the cast or something. But I didn't get a chance to play that. I updated Battlefield 4 as well, since I had Origin open anyway. Why not just update Battlefield 4 so that I can continue probably not playing that again? but it is ready. Should I ever feel the need arise? But no, mostly, I got back on the PUBG wagon this week and, played quite a few duos with John, last night. And I don't know what it is, if like people are getting better or we were getting matched in harder games, but, we did not do as well as we normally do. So maybe it was just a fluke or something, but, we had a few top 10 finishes, but nothing where we were super close to getting a win. It was like kind of a little bit of a dejecting night of PUBG, like when you don't even get close to a win. So it was not great, but I mean, I still had fun. We played like the fog map a couple times, and that's just that fog map is kind of fun because it completely changes the way you play. Like, you're just like avoiding sniper rifles, which is such a weird feeling in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then like also I guess toward the end that becomes annoying because you can end up dying to someone that you can't even see. So played a little bit of that, but not a whole lot else this week. I wanted to return to Pyre and play a little more of that, but again, I just didn't really find the time with other stuff going on. So maybe this next week I'll hop back into it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. What about you, Katie? What did you play? What did you play this week? I see you tweaking your beard over there. You got some thoughts?
Whatever is on here. No, just, I played some good stuff this week. I, continued Hob for a little bit. Still haven't finished that game yet, but it's definitely been getting better. It's just, still getting soured by reaching the end of areas and then things will happen, but you'll expect something like a boss fight, but then just there's no payoff, but. Other than that, it's really not like as big of a problem as it sounds, but it's still been a really fun game, but still not that polished. What I did start that I put a lot of time into so far, I haven't had a lot of free time, but I'm like 7 hours into, but A Hat in Time came out and I picked that up immediately. And that game has been so goddamn good so far. It's been in development forever and it's really showing off. It feels like you're playing like something like, you think about a Mario equivalent, like a 3D Mario equivalent on PC. It doesn't really exist, you know, but Hat in Time is finally out. It feels like you're jumping straight back. It's the vibes you get from like something like Mario Sunshine are so strong here, or like visually just looks a lot like Wind Waker. It's such a really polished game. And a lot of the levels bring like, it follows the same kind of structure where your main hub is like your ship and you're kind of like sort of shipwrecked and you need to find the, like, you know, equivalent of power stars to power your ship or whatever. And so you're unlocking new levels that way. There are only 5 worlds, but there are like different things you can do in each world. And each level turns out like you'll explore some of the same areas, but they turn out to be like completely different. And some levels they go by so quickly, but so much effort and polish and budget has been put into this game where you really wouldn't think it's an indie title from playing it. Like I just recently got to the 4th level in the game. And I'm not going to spoil it, but that was just, I mean, I streamed it today. So, I mean, if you want to see the VOD, you can see my reaction, not an advertisement, hashtag, anyways, no, but it was just, it was jaw dropping what happened in that game. And it's just the beautifully, atmospherically wonderful. And, it's got a lot of really cool options, like, speedrun mode, where, and like a mode where it will like, won't save your game just if you're, you know, going to be resetting a lot. So you don't have to go back and delete your save. And like just from the start of the game, it won't factor in like load times or anything, but they'll just be like a counter at the top telling you how well they're doing. And it's only been a few days and they're already, it's looking like the speed run is going to be, they can definitely push it. Right now, I think it's like an hour and 10 minutes, but they can definitely push it under an hour from looking at. So I'm excited to get into it that way. It's just, it's been a really fun and like just really enjoyable game. Like really the only thing I can think of that I, you know, I'm not ecstatic about is like, some of the voice acting in the game is just, you know, indie game voice acting, if you know what I mean. It's not the best, but there's actually an upgrade you can get really early on that will, well, one, you can either just, you know, go in the options and mute all of the dialogue from characters if you don't want to hear the voices, but you can also unlock something where it will change everyone's voices to like mumble speech, like from Banjo-Kazooie. So instead of talking, it'll just go, and it's like the same voice actor. It's just, incredible. I'm really like wanting to unlock. I haven't unlocked it yet because I'll be getting other upgrades, but it's not cheap, but it looks really cool. And,
how much is that game?
It's 30. It's, it's nice. $30. And from what I've played so far, there's just a really big amount of content. There are like secret levels to find. Tons of secrets everywhere and little, like, different costumes to unlock, different, like, hats, you know, whatever. But it's been a really fun game, and I really highly recommend it for anybody looking for, if you want to play another, like, a Mario equivalent, that's not Mario, or if maybe Yooka-Laylee kind of soured you with its, you know, apparently not being very good, then Hat in Time, I'm sure. Like people will fall in love with it, but what's really sad is,
are you playing it with?
Using an Xbox, Xbox One controller, which has been pretty great. Some people are using the GameCube controller, but one of the like main moves in the game is this dive that's on the like the right trigger, which like doesn't really work well on a GameCube controller because like the travel time on it. But and what's another thing? Some levels just don't work as well as others. Like sometimes, like there are obvious standout levels, but what really sucks the most about this is that given its time of release so close to Cuphead, no one is talking about this game. It really kind of sucks that this game isn't really getting the attention it so much deserves because they've been working on this game for so long and it's such an amazing game. I just really wish, you know, people would, you know, more people knew about it. But I feel like once it's only on PC now, but it's coming to PS4 and Xbox One. And I feel like once it gets there, people are going to start, you know, picking up on it more. So, as soon as this cast is over, I'm going to jump back into that. I can't wait to play more of that game.
Nice.
But, other than that, I mean, played some more Guilty Gear just to kind of practice. I wanted to get really good at a certain fighting game, so I picked that one, and it's been pretty fun so far. So, just more of that here and there, but that's all.
Nice.
So, pretty good week.
Yeah, not bad. What about you, Ying? What you been playing?
I haven't been playing a whole lot of new things. I'm still trying to make myself finish Assassin's Creed Unity.
The trial continues.
I'll refine my criticism of that game somewhat. mostly in that it's still not good. But what's upsetting is that I can see that they had a lot of really good ideas, and that's kind of frustrating. Like some of the level design and the things that they were obviously going for were kind of cool, but the missions and the way they want you to do things require such a grace and precision that the controls just do not offer you. And so you are constantly, you have this idea, you know exactly how you want to execute it, and instead of your character jumping from one ledge onto this rope, he does a straight dive off the ground in front of some guards and dies. And it's the clunkiest kind of way to make your way through the missions, and it feels like when you finally do what you want, it's sort of by accident, and which is unfortunate. And then of course it comes down to the writing too. Like there's this big turn in the story where this huge dramatic event happens, but throughout the entire game they've really expanded on why that's important to this character. They just sort of have implied it the entire time, and so when it happens, this huge dramatic turn, you have no attachment to it, but they make a big deal about it in the game. And it's like, I don't care. Like we can move past this. I don't understand why this is important. So that's been a struggle, but I have also been playing a lot of the Star Wars Battlefront 2 beta, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more, but
no, go for it now.
I did hear through the grapevine, Scott, that you are not a fan of the Starfighter mode where you're in space with the big jump.
No, that's less to do with the mode and more to do with I just don't enjoy. I've never been a fan of like the flying, combat kind of games.
All right, yeah, I was thinking you were saying, and because I have the exact opposite take. I think the flying in that game is so well executed.
Mm-hmm.
Like the degree of control that they managed to give you, even I think it's even better on keyboard mouse. Like this is the first time, this is the first case in terms of flying where I think I would recommend to someone to try to get used to it on a keyboard and mouse. Really? It's not the easiest thing to learn. Like I hopped in, I still understood how it worked, but I was crashing into other ships. I couldn't aim for anything at all. But once you get used to it, you can tell what people are playing with a controller and which people are playing with a mouse because it's not as dramatic, but it's sort of like if you were playing a shooter. And you know when someone's using a controller, the way their aim looks and how they're doing.
Right.
Because the way that they ask you to shoot at other ships benefits the mouse so much. I'm going to try to explain it, but it's sort of like when you put your mouse towards the edge of the screen, that's when your ship starts to turn. And there's this sort of dead zone more towards the center of the screen where you're aiming where your ship shoots. And that center zone with a mouse, you can hit people so easily.
So much more precise than the sticks.
It's like a first-person shooter. You're just controlling a crosshair in the center.
Right.
And then when you turn towards this, when you push your mouse towards the edge of the screen, it's sort of like it's like the way you scroll in a real-time strategy kind of game, where if you keep your mouse towards the edge, your ship keeps turning, and the moment your mouse comes off the edge of the screen, it will stop turning. And so unlike other games where you have to constantly feed your mouse off to the left in order to keep turning, you can just hold your mouse to the left and you'll continue to turn. And so I think that's why it benefits the mouse so much. And then when you get towards the center, you can out-aim basically anyone because you're using a mouse.
Right. That's interesting tech, yeah. And that's really interesting. I tried to, because I didn't leave enough time because I was just like, well, this mode's not going to be something I play. But so I didn't really give enough time to like really test the controls with the mouse, but that actually makes a lot of sense now hearing you describe it like that.
Because like I know the biggest issue when you're just flying, the controller I'm sure feels great, but the moment you have to shoot and aim your crosshair towards that center of the screen, because you can move in a certain area towards the center where you're shooting, you're at such a disadvantage when you're using a controller, just like you would be if you're at any first-person shooter. But aside from that, even the way that they let you do barrel rolls and the way that you can maneuver your ship, I think is so well executed. I think it's the best feeling flying mechanic that I've ever felt in a game, just by the degree of precision that they're offering you. Like, there's even a setting in the option that's called advanced flight mode, where you can make your ship do not a barrel roll, but you can sort of pivot the axis of your ship, and it won't automatically level it out to the horizon afterwards. So you can fly at all kinds of weird, crazy angles, and it takes a lot of getting used to. I think the first time you try it, it's going to feel awful. Like, I tried to make a couple of other people get used to the keyboard mouse, and they just couldn't do it. But I think once you get used to it, it is wonderful. I think that's mostly been. I've been playing a little bit of Warface, the free-to-play shooter.
Yes, we have.
Hell yeah!
And
not much luck.
And the game itself, I think, is competent.
Yeah.
The player base is not.
No, they are not competent at all.
And I don't mean that in the sense that there is not players. You can find a game pretty easily in Warface.
Yeah.
But you can tell that this player base is pretty casual when it comes to shooting games.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's to a point where in some lobbies, it's not fun because you're the only one dropping 40 to 50 plus kills and you're just getting shouted at in Spanish about cheating.
Lots of Spanish.
There must be a very large Spanish-speaking player base. I don't know what country that may be from, whether it's across the ocean or further down south, but regardless, it seems to have a very large Spanish population. I am expanding my knowledge of that language as a result.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting. It's at least interesting because it's been a long time since I've played a game that really survives off of microtransactions. So to hop into a lobby and to feel like I'm pretty decked out, because like the guns in that game are very accessible. You can get yourself some very good gear pretty early on. It's not really a grind fest, I'd say.
No.
But the hop into a lobby and you feel like you have some good equipment, and next to you is some guy in like weird gold plated armor with this fancy banner and this gun that looks like it's from Spain.
Yeah.
But what's good about that, to their credit, that guy with the space gun you can still easily beat him.
Absolutely. Like if you're moderately competent, you can just use the free currency and just use the stuff that you can buy with that. And sure, there's some guns that are a little bit better, but up against the average player base, like you said, Ying, you're gonna shred him. It doesn't really, you're not really gonna get outshot by too much.
Yeah, but I think the game is very fair to people who actually want to just play free. The balance is good because if you want to maintain the gear that you actually like using, you will have to play every day at least.
Right.
But it's not at all unachievable. Like if you log like an hour or two in that game every day, you'll be fine.
Yep.
I've already fallen off of it though, because it's just not for me. But as far as a free-to-play shooter goes, I do think it is quite competent, but that's mostly what I've been playing this week.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll go too. Yeah. I played Warface with you. The main issues I was having with Warface was we were having issues getting in a we couldn't get everybody in the same party at the same time.
Yeah.
So that was annoying. So we're having some invite like lobby issues. And the thing that kills me about Warface is like the actual game mechanics are good. The game runs really well. But there's also like depending on the mode that you play, there's just some. I mean, they basically just make these kill box maps. Like TDM is essentially, there's not really much to it. It's just like, imagine playing on a slightly larger shipment. And that's basically what like the TDM is in that game. Mm. There's a lot of other game modes that are larger maps. But like you said, the overall player base is pretty, pretty terrible. But if you don't have any money and even if I kind of like it for the kind of mindlessness, I guess it's the same way I felt about COD. I wasn't on the cast last week. I'm sure you talked about the COD beta. COD World War II beta bit.
Yeah.
So I played some of that too, and I enjoyed that. I didn't really play during the cheating. Apparently just devolved into lots and lots of cheaters towards the end of the open beta. But
yeah. I didn't run into too many, but yeah, there are definitely a few.
Yeah. But for the same reason I enjoy that mindlessness of just kind of running around and killing people. I kind of like Warface for the same thing. Like, and it's free too. And like you said, and even like I purchased in Warface, I purchased the little XP boost thing. It's like $2 or $3. You get a certain amount of points and then you can keep buying the XP boost for like multiple days. And you basically will level up like, I don't know, like maybe 50% faster, 60% faster and constantly getting currency. There's like this boost that gives you more money, more XP, more whatever. I don't know. There's like 50 different little currency things I feel like in that game at the bottom, but you basically earn all that stuff way faster if you spend a few bucks. So it's like, again, if it's a free-to-play game, I think people look at that and they go, oh, it's free-to-play. I should never have to spend money. I think that's a totally it's like, no, they literally make their money from microtransactions. So if you spend a few bucks to level up faster, it's like, I don't understand what the issue is with that.
Yeah.
But no, I do think it's competent. I'm with you. But yeah, definitely player base questionable.
Yeah. I mean, to clarify, it's not questionable in terms of numeric. Like, it's the actual numbers of people playing is just
fine. Oh, yeah, there's a lot. You can get games. It's just... There's also this thing where when you're playing it and there's a rookie lobby and professional lobby. And so once if you're under 13, you're in the rookie lobby. And as soon as you hit 13, it puts you in with the pros. Let me tell you, they're really pros, as Yingity can attest. But if you're trying to play with newer accounts, you can't play with them until they're level 13. So that's also, I don't know, I guess there's maybe some method to the madness. They figure that they don't want. I think it's probably an attempt to stop people from shredding. Like once you get to 13, but then once you get into 13, it's like the same thing. People are still terrible. So it doesn't really serve its purpose. I guess that's more the player base than what they're trying to do. But, beyond that, echo your thoughts on, Battlefront 2 beta, on the other modes too. I mean, the Starfighter mode was fine. I think it's actually really cool. It's just not my cup of tea. I don't enjoy playing, those modes in general, but I kind of had a back and forth on Battlefront. First of all, it's, Brandon, it's one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen. And that's the one thing when you play it, it is stunning. Like, it's one of those games that literally I don't blame the normies, quote unquote, who like see this advertised on TV and go, I just want to run around and I'll die over and over if I can just play Star Wars. Cause it's that beautiful. Like, you really, it's breathtaking. So, and I'm on a 970 and the game runs and it's also so well optimized. I didn't have any issues. It runs so well. It looks amazing. The modes that they gave us and stuff like that are really competent and fun. I didn't play the first game, so it's hard for me to like what they did with the heroes this time is basically you earn a certain amount of points throughout the game that tally up as a total, and then you can spend your points on different things like a better battle droid or like once you hit 5,000, you can buy all stuff like that. So it basically, I think in the first game, right, they were just drops or they were random. I don't know. It was a drop. It was a drop. So they basically got, that was a huge issue I heard from people that played the first game. So that's gone now. And I think the new system is actually really fair. It doesn't ever feel like you're just constantly, at least in the beta, like you're constantly dealing with like, you know, Jedis or like there's this unfair advantage. So I think that's actually a really good thing. And
does it strike you more as kind of like a kill streak type of system where like basically you're just accumulating points. And so eventually everyone's going to get,
powerful. If you're somewhat, I mean, if you're competent, it depends on how the game's going. Like if you're getting destroyed and you're not doing too well, you probably won't be able to get to something like, you know, the 5,000 point one, which is like an actual hero, like Han Solo or something. But even if you're just doing okay, there's lower tier ones. So like you can get like a fighter, you can get, like a droid that's like 3,000 or 2,000. I forget what it goes down from there, but yeah, exactly. So essentially kill streaks, but not near as powerful as COD kill streaks or anything like that. Like even these droids, like one of the droids you'll get, he might have 300 hit points as opposed to like 200 that you start with. So again, you can still be kind of put down pretty quickly. And I think even with like, depending on how you play, like a Jedi or Han Solo, like you can get if you get focus fired and don't get out of there, you can absolutely be killed super fast by a team that's competent. And that's good. You do regenerate health over time, but it's not super fast. And so it feels overall like there's definitely going to have to do things to balance certain weapons and all that. But I feel like this open beta really kind of sold me on the game overall. Like I'm not going to pre-order it, but I think I'm going to buy it because it's really, really fun with the group. And I had a really good time Friday night playing with my chat and a bunch of people in there. And so that's been enjoyable. Did you play, Yang, how much did you play of the other modes? Were you with us? You were playing a bit.
I played a lot of the ground gameplay.
Yeah, the 40 player one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I certainly agree with you that the game looks and also sounds wonderful. The sound design of that game is also spectacular. And that's nothing new. Actually, the first Battlefront, for all of its flaws, also looked wonderful and sounded amazing. But, I mean, I think the biggest concern still is people are wondering how long the game will be alive.
How much content is going to be.
That's why I should try the beta, because I don't think I'm going to buy this game, just because it does seem to have such a short lifespan, or at least the last one did. So I kind of want to, like, I want to just dip my toe in and see the visuals and stuff, but that, like, I don't want to have to pay $60 just to do that.
Sure.
Exactly.
That's fair.
And one of the discussions I was having with someone else was, I mean, it's, I think the people who are very interested in Battlefront have been pretty vocal about this.
Yeah.
We really want Galactic Conquest back, which if you're not familiar with that, it's the single player mode. It's sort of like almost like an RTS element where you are controlling fleets to go conquer all these different planets. And in order to conquer a planet, you actually have to play a game of Battlefront to actually, like, you'll do the whole thing where you land on the planet, you'll play out a match like normal. And then if you win that match, then you go back out to the Galactic Conquest screen and you then proceed with your game. And that was a single player feature in the original Battlefronts that people absolutely loved. And there was like an interesting part where if your fleet attacked a planet that had another fleet, well, that would start a space battle. And it sort of was like an interesting element that way. And that was single player. And so if people are so concerned about the longevity of the game, it's interesting to me that we haven't heard anything about that game mode, given that people are so vocal about saying, like, there's a lot of people saying, like, I would buy that game right now if they reintroduced Galactic Conquest.
Interesting.
So I'd be a part of that boat. I think if Galactic Conquest came out, I would definitely buy this game at some point. As of now, I really enjoy it, but I don't know if I can justify spending full amount on it right now. I wish I could, because the beta has been a lot of fun, but there's other concerns that mostly have to do with the game's longevity in terms of multiplayer, because that's what it's trying to live off of right now.
Right.
And of course, we know very little about the single player campaign. Who knows? Maybe people who did buy it or pre-ordered it will say that the single player is, you know, it takes 30 hours to complete or something like that. Or the storyline's amazing. Like, it's an experience all in and of itself. And that would be, all right, cool. That sounds like it's worth it too. But that's an unknown. So it's, can't really speak to that right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I don't know if I'm going to, it's going to be tough because I'm going to get kind of caught up in the hype of when it comes out, and I'm going to be like, man, I want to play it. But like you said, probably a smart move is to wait and be like, all right, is it around after a week or two, right? Are people still playing it?
Yeah.
If anything, I could almost see buying it more for the single player because you just said that like the visuals are amazing, the audio is amazing, like that sort of game. I wouldn't necessarily mind paying for the single player and like cranking all the graphics up, you know, because since I'm not worried about keeping like a solid 60 frames or whatever, just kind of coast through a single player and enjoy like the technical achievement of that game.
Sure. That's a good point too. There's so many, I mean, oh man, there's so many games coming out that I'm basically committed to. I've said I'm going to play. I didn't really talk too much about the World War II beta, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it did exactly what I wanted a COD to do. It cut down on dying from killstreak stuff. It's just gun-on-gun combat. There's lots of shitty stuff, but it's Call of Duty. And that's, you know, I've been away from the series for a long time, and it stripped all that stupid jumping around, you know, wall-running garbage.
Oh,
and, so I'm totally down. Like, I'm totally down to pay 60 bucks. If the game's dead in a week, that's fine. You know what, dude? I'll enjoy my week of playing that game for what it is. It's interesting, having been so far removed from the COD hate train, it's interesting to me how angry people get about Call of Duty still. And it's, again, Call of Duty is in one of those stages where you can never please, they can never please anybody. Yeah. It's like, they strip it down and everyone's like, what the fuck? It's still COD. It's like, yeah, that's what, I mean, that's what it's going to be. They release COD every year. Like, so I don't know. I find that actually really funny. I think the major concerns people have is the technical issues with the engine are just not running as well as it should be. That's what people felt like it should be for a beta.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, but overall, I really enjoyed the beta, like also, to speak more about the jetpacks and everything, like the day after it ended, I went back to Black Ops 3 for a bit and I couldn't even play it. Like it was so infuriating, like just getting one shot left and right, people, you know, flying over my head. It's just, I could not, it felt like the dumbest, it felt like an entirely different game.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like really shocking, like for Call of Duty to feel like two distinct different games is... Mm. Yeah, so I'm not sure if I'll pick it up full price, but I do want to play more World War II for sure.
Yeah,
don't forget, that's Scott, right, that we have Destiny 2 coming to PC.
No, I was just
going to
say
well.
That was the next one I was going to say.
My God,
we've got COD World War II, we've got Destiny 2, we've got Battlefront 2. There's a lot of like at least in the shooting category.
Pretty stocked fourth quarter for PC games.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I am so excited for Destiny 2. Oh my God.
Yeah, and I didn't mention this, but I will mention it real quick. Fortnite VR, I don't know if you guys talked about that last week at all, if you guys have played that. But I've been playing. I was super skeptical. We talked about it 2 weeks ago, and, you know, like, how good is this going to be? It sounds like, you know, just a kind of a pivot from their main game mode, which they worked on forever, and then it's not really gaining traction. Let me tell you, man, Fortnite Battle Royale is super fun, and it's super competent, and all the things that it still doesn't have the greatest gun mechanics. It's definitely way more arcadey and less serious than something like a PUBG. But it came out of the gate and it came swinging. And I'm starting to kind of see PUBG's fear. I feel like, because we talked about it's twofold. Like, sure, they're paying royalties and all that to Epic because they're using the same engine. And they're concerned that they might be pilfering stuff that they're going to use to improve Fortnite. But then also... like you play Fortnite and you go, this is their first, you know, they've been able to sit back and be like, okay, we're going to add a PR game and pivot, away from our main game mode to try to, you know, build a base that way. They've been able to look at H1Z1 and PUBG and stuff like that and see the stuff where that needed to be in game off of launch. And it is so refreshing to launch a game one time, right? You go to your launcher, sure, it's on the Epic launcher. Okay, another separate launcher, whatever. But you launch the game, and guess what? I have not had to restart my Fortnite a single time. The game runs very smooth. I've had zero performance issues with the game. You just jump into game to game. The games are shorter. There's no camping in that game. You can't really camp in that game until the end when you're building stuff. But it's not like you're never going to really be surprised by somebody in that game, like somebody sitting in a house for 20 minutes. It just doesn't happen because the map's a lot smaller. I've been having a lot of fun with that game, and I was totally surprised and blindsided by it. I didn't think I was. I was super skeptical. So I really recommend, if you want to switch up from the more seriousness of PUBG, like you should try Fortnite VR. It's really, really fun. And like the building elements and all that stuff that would seem really stupid and not fun are actually really, you can get pretty tactical towards the end, like building up somewhat of a base and getting elevations to like find the last couple people, using building stuff on the fly to run away for cover. I don't know, man. I can't really say enough good things about it, and I didn't think I was going to. And it's free. That's the other thing, is that there's zero barrier to entry with that game. And it's hit so many of the things that these other BR games cannot fucking get right. So I definitely think, even if you're skeptical, you should try it out. I think people are turned off by how cartoony, you know, it looks. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw a lot of people come in my chat saying, like, oh, this is just, I just can't get into this. It's too cartoony. It's like, just play it. Like, actually try it. And I don't, that doesn't really become an issue. So anyway, that was another thing.
I hear that you like it so much. I wouldn't have, I wouldn't have thought that would be like a game that was up your alley, but
not at all.
After hearing you say that, I kind of want to give it a try.
You definitely should. Yeah. Right now, Roger's point out, apparently there's a pretty bad hacker problem that they're trying to deal with. So maybe once they deal with that, check it back out. But, I'm just as surprised as you, but really fun, really fun. So I think that's, quite a bit of variety, but I think that's the main stuff. Playing.
I miss not being able to load textures, so I'm going back to PUBG.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, right? Back to PUBG you go.
That sounds like some personal issues.
Yeah, that is basically on my end. I know I don't hear too many people about having the issues that I have, so that's probably not fair.
Yeah, I think it all came down to, you just needed to get an SSD and install the game on there, and your problems are probably
that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I've got Fortnite installed, but I have not played it. I really need to get around to it.
Yeah, so it's definitely a good time. Definitely with the group too. And they got squads and all that. So
let's keep the variety going with an article on KB Mod this week. We have a game that we talked about in the new releases a little while back, but Sura6 reviewed Ruiner for us. That new game that just came out pretty recently. He did a video of it, a little quick review with some gameplay. Game looks really neat, but definitely check out that review. Obviously, it's on kbmod.com. That's the only article from this week, but it's a good one. So check out that video, and get yourself educated on Ruiner.
You know, it's interesting, Brandon. Ruiner is a brutal cyberpunk shooter, and you know. The word brutal could not more aptly describe what my heart feels as we talk about this mm-hmm. first story in news.
The biggest news story of the week, really.
Absolutely. Guys, AOL Instant Messenger, as I'm sure you've heard, and if you haven't heard, you've been living under a rock. AIM is shutting down after 20 years of service. And I think, again, for the older crowd in here, I would say, I don't know, for the age range, I guess, I don't know, Katie, how old are you? You're 21? You're 21, right? So, you're muted.
Sorry, 21, Mike was muted. Yeah.
Yep, you're 21. And Katie was saying he doesn't really remember too much. I'm 30.
So this Brandon, you're kind this of, is what, not what even, you, 20, yeah, this 7, doesn't, this maybe. Doesn't come, like, this doesn't cover the entire range of millennial age.
Not the total.
This right. is like, this is like right. higher, sort of the latter half of millennials, I think, will
yes.
understand this.
But I think a lot of our audience, who tends to be kind of our age, Brandon, and you know, around there, a little older.
Yeah.
It's hard. We were talking about it in the pre-show, actually, because Katie was saying, because we were talking about, Brandon, I forget what you brought up. You had brought up, oh yeah, nothing will ever compare to seeing your crush log on to their AOL Instant Messenger account, right? And you hear the little door open, right?
Yeah. And then it comes open. And then like that, you know, that you start sweating a little bit, and you're like, you know, do you want to message them? Are they going to message you? And then, like, you know, maybe you get the courage to start typing out a message, and then they sign off 30 seconds later, there is just that visceral feeling, like your whole night done.
God, there really wasn't, dude. The door. And I was saying the other thing that made it so brutal, if that happened, you know, if someone signed off right away when you're trying to message them, like the door slammed. That was one thing. The AOL Instant Messenger is so iconic.
The sound effects.
And the sound effects that they had for that, I mean, they became synonymous with, and I think that was one of the strongest things that AOL ever did, was they just always picked like really iconic sounds. And,
you absolutely remember that one time that you left your speakers on like super loud or something. And then all of a sudden someone signs into AIM or signs out and like it just scares everyone in the house.
Yeah. It's, It's a little bit crazy. I think one thing I have to ask you guys, now I've been pretty transparent about my online history when it came to AOL Instant Messenger. I don't know, Brandon, if you've ever told us, but I think I've said this on the podcast too. My AOL Instant Messenger name was The Signs Are Here. all together, all lowercase. And I just thought I was super mysterious and edgy. I don't know what, I didn't really have any. I used to be really into fucking aliens and shit like that, but it wasn't even that. I liked the way it flowed. I thought it looked cool. I think
were you a song lyrics in your away message kind of person?
I definitely
called that one. Like you seem like the person who would have been on top of that. Like new song lyrics every few days. Right, yep. Like you got to check the away message because you were constantly updating it.
Yep, definitely have some Taking Back Sunday in there, maybe some Fall Out Boy, definitely some emo music for sure. And you had to, like, there was all these little things that, again, the kids just, they have it so good nowadays, or they have it so different, I guess. Like, because there was, I was even like people got introduced to just even, there was no regulation, right? There was no... So you would log on to your AOL Instant Messenger, dude, and in 2 seconds you could be in a chat room where people were talking about, very adult things that you had no business as a young kid being involved in. And again, I'm not saying you can't get into that now, but it was just so kind of like the Wild West, I think of when I think of kind of early chat stuff on the internet. Like if you wanted to go and, cyber, you could find a place to do that. If you didn't even know what that meant. Or like all of a sudden people like it was just, and I'm saying that's the more nefarious side of it, but it was crazy.
That term even came about because of AIM. Like that wasn't really even a term until AIM existed.
Exactly. No, it's absolutely crazy that it's finally, not crazy that it's shutting down, but definitely a little bit bittersweet.
Crazy that lasted this long. I mean, no, I don't think anyone uses AIM these days, but in the early days, it was kind of at least for me, I remember it was kind of the intersection of like online friends and real life friends. Like,
yes,
for a while there, everyone used AIM, and it was interesting that like it almost feels a little bit similar to now in that everyone congregated around this one service, and then things kind of like splintered off, and now a lot of people now use the same set of services, but there are a lot of different messenger services, whereas back in the day, like this AIM was pretty much it. Everyone at your school used AIM, and like maybe the one weird kid used ICQ, which was also owned by AIM.
Oh, I had an ICQ account and never used it, but yeah, I had one. Yeah, I had your number, right?
ICQ downloaded. ICQ I had number. An ICQ number. I remember same. My ICQ number same. To this day, but I didn't ever really use it. And so it was like AIM was where everyone was in real life. My like gaming friends were on IRC, and then like a few people here and there on ICQ. But like that was basically it back in back in the late, I guess, mid to late 90s when AIM came around.
Yeah, people. Mike's talking about MSN. I never used MSN. I think in certain areas people did.
MSN apparently was a huge deal in Europe. Like everyone in Europe used MSN.
Yes. I think so. And I guess America Online, that makes sense why it was in America. But yeah, I never got into MSN. Do you guys have any AOL Instant Messenger stories or any? Katie, like you said, literally, this is where, like, man, I'm getting so fucking old. Katie told us in the pre-show that his only reference for AIM is a free game on Steam where you literally talk to a girl on AOL Instant Messenger. And it's like a story-based text game. But I'm getting, it's not your fault. It's just the way it is that like I'm so old that like, that's crazy to me that that's really your only interaction with it. But you wouldn't have had to. You coming up, you have different options. Phones.
Someday my kids will play a game about going on Twitch and whispering some chick and trying to get nudes.
Yeah, that'll be exactly. That's true. No, you're right. That'll be your your game story.
Right. But yeah, I wish I could experience that. I wish I could have been there. But I mean, I definitely know the texting struggle. It's just, that specific example,
Exactly.
You guys have that. I can't take that from you.
I mean, I literally had, when it comes to AOL Instant Messenger, my first, I'm trying to think, like my first like serious girlfriend that I had through high school and then a little bit into college, was she needed, I remember she had needed somebody to go with, she went to an all girls school and she needed a guy friend to go with her to this dance. And so I was told through the grapevine, about that. And then after I was told about that, I was just giving her AOL instant messenger handle and was told to contact her about it that way. And then we struck up and we basically knew each other. We got to know each other before the dance through AOL instant messenger. And then when we went to the dance, and then we ended up dating, and then anyway, down the road. But again, that was all through AIM. Like, I mean, it was like, you had to have your screen name ready to go because so much of the dialogue was that. I didn't have a cell phone. And I think she did, but she probably only had like, NoTech in chat was talking about how like, I only get 300 texts a month. Here's my AIM, username. Cause that's what it was. Cause it was so expensive to send texts. Like, that's the other thing is like, when you guys have cell phones, like you have these unlimited plans or these gigs of data or text and calls are not even included in the plans. Like we lived in the days where it was like, I get 150 texts on this device. And if I go over, I get charged per text. Like,
well, which is, I think, we're so like far from that. For a lot of, in high school, crazy. Like texts, most kids didn't even have texting plans.
It no, was just
like
exactly.
Basically, you had a phone for, you know, like emergencies and whatever. Yep. Like you had minutes, you could make calls. Like texting wasn't even a thing. Like you didn't have friends' phone numbers or like basically AIM was where you added people. Like instead of what we would do today with Facebook, it's like, I had people on my AIM buddy list who I didn't really talk to that much in real life, but they were, you know, friends or people I knew at school, like acquaintances. Yeah. And so that was like I feel like that's the way people use something like Facebook now, is like you friend a whole bunch of acquaintances. And maybe your close friends, you have like their phone numbers, you know, whatever. But yeah, AIM was kind of all that rolled into one. So
Yeah.
Nostalgia. Yeah.
Absolutely. The nostalgia is very strong. Yang, did you ever have any experience with AOL Instant Messenger? Even though you're in Canada?
I had a greater affinity. I did use it, but I had a greater affinity for MSN.
Gotcha. Was MSN as iconic? Like, did you have the same kind of feelings about MSN? Because I know, like, people were saying in Europe and stuff, a lot of other countries, even South America, they used MSN. Like, I don't have any reference for it. Like, was there the same kind of sound?
The same feeling, like you get the little notification on your desktop when that person logs in, and then minutes later they appear offline, or you think they appear offline.
Right. Okay. And then, so similar feeling.
Yeah. You still get all of the same kinds of things. So I certainly relate to the idea of AOL shutting down and that going away. But, my friends and I, we all used MSN Messenger. And again, I almost forgot that this happened, but, The stereotype today is, you know, you get a girl's phone number. I remember in high school getting a girl's MSN handle.
And there you go.
Telling me to add them on MSN, and I was like, same yes.
Exactly. No, sure. Yeah. That was the currency, man. Before the digits and everyone had cell phones running around. Yeah, dude. So it's definitely, I mean, like you said, Brandon, it's bittersweet. I guess I said, like, I can't believe it's shutting down, but you're right. You said it better. I can't believe it lasted this long. is definitely a better, cause I mean, you know, it kind of bums me out. I think it shuts down December 15th. I should do a stream where I log into my AOL Instant Messenger account and I should see what the hell is happening. Like, what is even there? What can I do? Can I just join random chat rooms?
See who is on your buddy list? And
yeah,
like,
is
and
anybody
like talk
signed
about,
on?
Yeah, see if anyone signed on, and like see who is really actually who's still there. Like see how many of the names you recognize, and like why they were on your buddy list.
God, that's such. I would have so many like nostalgia trips of like people I haven't thought about in like probably 10 or 15 years, and be like, oh my God, I wonder whatever happened to them. Yeah, for sure. Crazy.
But yeah, it's interesting. It was always free. So I mean, I'm surprised that it lasted as long as it did, because I don't think it ever really made AOL any money, and it hasn't been, I don't think it's been widely used since what, probably like the maybe late 2000s. I feel like I was still using AIM probably a bit in college, not a ton, but, but like in the past, I would say 5 years or so, I mean, no one uses AIM anymore.
No, absolutely not. I was just thinking, man, if I had just been a little bit, like making a, it would be hilarious to make a business card with all the outdated messaging apps. Like, can you imagine? I'd make two copies of your business card. So like one of them I have that's legit that has like, you know, all like up to date information with my contact email and all that. But then another one with my AIM screen name, my
ICQ number.
What else? Like an MSN. Anything else that like my
your server CS, for your CS clans IRC channel on GameNet.
IRC my IRC channel that they can join and see how many people you would catch that way. God, that would be cool. But yeah, whatever. But I think it was I think December 15th is when the servers, if I remember the article, are shutting down. So
yeah.
Guys, if you want to if you want to get your last bits of nostalgia, you know, and you want to hear the sounds, I mean, I'm sure the sounds will be preserved forever. You can find them on, but you know. I also wonder if it's going to be something like, you know, when an MMO dies and everyone logs into the server on the last day and they have like a whole, if there's going to be a massive influx of people for the nostalgia factor logging in to their AIM account.
Probably not, because no one remembers their old password for their AIM account.
I'm going to have to remember mine. I don't even know.
I don't see myself making a new account for AIM.
It's
not that early to experience.
Yeah. Just for us old fogies, but, well, there you go. So pour one out for AOL Instant Messenger. I'd say 20 years, like you said, it's a pretty good run. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And
this is just the sort of thing that happens as you get older. Like things will just start shutting down that you took for granted earlier in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Man. All right. Try not to have a crisis. Let's move on here. I'm already feeling very old, but, you know what? Let's talk about the game that we can't go a podcast without talking about. And that is, of course, the number one game in
guess
the world.
What's not
number
shutting
one
down.
Battle Royale game in the world. Guess what is not getting shut down? Exactly. PUBG. Okay. But this, okay. So I will bear to say before we talk about this negative angle of PUBG, the positive angle, Brandon, you were just looking at the stats before we got on the
couch. Because every week they seem to hit a new high. And sure enough,
right,
they've hit a high of almost 2 million concurrent users on Steam, which is wild. Crazy. Like the fact that just a few weeks ago we're talking about like, oh, you know, 1.3 million, they beat out Dota. 1.9, I mean, this is completely unprecedented territory for any game on Steam. So, I mean, it's not even news anymore, but it's kind of crazy that they have almost hit 2 million concurrent. And I imagine at some point they probably will because that was just like a day or two ago that they hit their new high. But exactly. Not everything is roses.
No, not everything is roses. Not at all. Brandon, you know why it's not roses? Because you know what? In China, which again, you know, just a moderately large population of, you know, the Chinese, there's a few people living in China.
A few people playing games.
A few people playing games. And they're not, the people in China are not too happy. And the reason that they're not very happy is because if you're a Chinese player, they've been basically unable to play the game at a decent level. There's, you know, lots of lag affected local servers in China, like that make the experience awful. And then therefore they're forced to join European or North American games, which obviously, you know, isn't ideal. And so you'd say, okay, whatever, like, you know, that could maybe get a surplus of negative reviews, because that's kind of what this article is about. There was basically 10,000 negative reviews posted on the PUBG Steam page basically in a day. This is early last week, but there was an influx of 10,000 negative reviews. And basically Chinese players noticed and reported that there was in-game advertising going on in the game itself, like in the client, for an accelerator VPN service that was promising to boost people's connections to international servers. So imagine, again, like put yourself into the Chinese player's shoes, all right? You bought this game for $30 or whatever the equivalent is, how many yen, and, you know, probably 60 million yen or something, and you're sitting there. And
yen is the Japanese currency.
Oh, I said Japanese. what is it in China?
Yuan.
It's, what
it's
is it?
Yuan.
One. Okay.
Yuan.
Okay, because China's number one, right?
Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah, that's fine. We'll go with that.
Wow!
Come on.
Did you do that on purpose? Like that was actually a very relevant joke.
It was, no, it absolutely was. I mean, it just was handed to me by Yingity, even though it happens to be true. All right. I'll take that one. But yes, China number one. And for more reasons than one. Okay, I'm going to stop. I can't stop.
Jesus.
Imagine that you're dealing with that horrible lag issue. You can't play the game. And then you get on and that there's actually like ad space seemingly sold to these companies that are going to advertise, you know, these third-party services that allow you to play the game better. So obviously, like, the negative reviews would already be everywhere if PUBG was totally unplayable in your country,
right,
as big as China. So you can appreciate that. But again, if there were advertisements to say, hey, you can use this to try to play better, that is an additional charge. I mean, I totally understand where the anger is coming from. So again, it resulted in 10,000 negative reviews. And I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on this? This is pretty, like, there hasn't been an official response. So this article was about, like I said, 7 days ago. It was early last week or this week. And they said they reached out to Bluehole and they never got a response.
I think from my perspective, it seems like probably a lot of the anger is because this wasn't communicated that they were going to be doing this. Like, a lot of the, I think being blindsided, the connection issues and everything is like, whatever. Like, that's happening. That's happening in a lot of places, and that's not a good experience at all. The players are going to be upset about that. But I think it kind of adds insult to injury when you have this in-game advertising, and it doesn't help that it's for a VPN. But like, let's ignore what it's for and just say, like, in-game advertising for a game that you have paid money for, right? It's not a free-to-play game. I think that's already kind of a hot-button topic for people. And so I think they should have gotten out in front of that choice and sort of talked to their Chinese community. And presumably they might do this in other regions too. I mean, I don't know why they would limit it only to China. But I think they should talk to their community about, hey, look, you know, we need to continue making money in the game in various ways in order to have it, you know, have a long lifespan. And this is one of the ways we're doing that, you know, and sort of prepare their audience for this sort of thing. The fact that it's for a VPN is just like sort of doubly bad press because they have bad connection issues for Chinese players. But I still think people would have been upset even if it was some other type of ad, because when you pay money for a game, you don't expect to have ads in the game. Period. Like, I think that's just a general expectation, right? When you buy an app on the App Store for your phone, generally speaking, you expect that not to have ads, right? Because you're paying real money for it. So I think they probably just bungled, like, not having a press message around this. And it's a shame that, like, this... I think the Steam review protest thing is really stupid. But also I understand why people do it, you know, like, some people really have an aversion to this sort of thing. And it was it's an unforced error, right? This is we talked about this when they had the little spat with Fortnite Battle Royale. Like, it's just an unforced error. They don't need these kinds of press issues. They're already getting so much positive press. Like, don't give the press a reason to put the game in the news for the wrong reasons. They're already going to write about it. Every single patch notes they're writing about, it's just, I think it's just maybe lack of forethought. Like, someone didn't think this would be a big deal, and they should have gotten ahead of it.
This is, well, absolutely, and the chat's talking about it, because again, I'm just like right now Googling while you're talking, I'm like, is there any update? And I'm going on the Reddit, there was a huge Reddit thread about it. There has not been any actual denial from Bluehole that this was, because again, a lot of people were like, well, maybe this was injected by like a third party, or the, you know, but there has been not a single message from Bluehole about, you know, whether it was something that they're allowing and selling ad space for directly, or if it's some workaround that some third party is doing. So again, like Baha saying in chat, I'm starting to question, like, this is a week has gone by and they're not denying that. Like, they could easily come out and just be like, yeah, this wasn't sanctioned by us and we'll get it figured out. But the fact that they're not, again, you don't want to say 100% that means that they were in on it, but it seems like, like, they got to know what's going on, and maybe they just don't have their response ready yet. But it doesn't look good, because again, this is already a game that has a target on its back because of how popular it is. They are making millions and millions of dollars every single day, and the player base just continues to grow. So if there is some deal struck up with a company to say, like, hey, yeah, you can push this, Maybe they get a percentage of the cut, obviously, for the advertising space. What I'm reading on the subreddit was basically the service, like it was somebody that was Chinese was explaining it, was saying it was basically $9 USD a month to use this, booster service. Okay. That's like a pretty, that's like more than an ESEA subscription and some other ones. That's as much as maybe some MMOs.
That's pretty expensive for a VPN.
That's pretty expensive, right? And that he, again, it wasn't verified, but he was saying that there has to be some deal struck with Bluehole that like they're getting a percentage of that. Obviously, it's injected.
That seems completely obvious, because I think you're right that if it was something nefarious, yeah. Which the only reason I even would say like maybe that's possible is because if this is only happening in China, like
right.
stuff happens with the internet in China where like I could believe that some nefarious third party is injecting things at the network level and that could be possible. But you're right. Exactly. That would be, if that was happening and it wasn't Bluehole responsible for this, they'd immediately deny it, right? They would like say they're investigating and all this stuff. But yeah, it's weird that they haven't responded one way or the other. And I think that it's also a particularly bad look because it is the, you know, one of the highest selling games on Steam ever already. And so like, I think that even if they had come out in front of this, they would have gotten some negative sentiment because people are going to say, why are you being greedy? You know, like you're the highest concurrent game on Steam ever. Like you guys are rolling in cash and you're going to show us ads now too. Right. So I think they still would have had to deal with some negative perception, but just not like basically not responding to this issue. I think it just feels like they're not thinking about these things or they don't like, I don't even know if it's malicious or nefarious. Like it seems like they're just not, just maybe like not equipped to be responsive to this stuff in a quick manner. Like, I don't even know, but they should be responding to this stuff.
Definitely. But yeah, they should at least there be something out there. The other thing I'm reading this here is it's saying, this is from another guy who claims to be knowledgeable about the publishing in China in general, but he says, basically you have to pay a Chinese publisher for them to let you put in Chinese servers. By law, you can't directly publish a game there or act in any way if you're a foreign company. So if they did that, he's saying Bluehole is going to have to pay a publisher and then obviously share the profits in China, which is like basically, isn't that what happens with CS? So Valve publishes CSGO, which is a different version that has microtransactions in China. It's Perfect World, I think, is the publisher of
CSGO. This is why you so commonly see like Perfect World or Tencent or some, you know, some Chinese company. Sort of manage the Chinese presence.
So this makes sense. He's saying that they don't want to do that, obviously, and they don't want to share the profits. So what they're doing is, they made a deal with a VPN because without a VPN, due to the, as he called it, the Great Chinese Firewall, you know, the experience is really, really painful if you don't play, with this VPN. And since it's not officially published, you're not going to get official servers. Basically, it seems like they made a deal with the Chinese VPN service to avoid having to pay that percentage.
But if all the thing is that if that was real, like, they would have gotten in front of it to say to tell their player base that's why it was happening. If they really, if they were actually doing it to circumvent the Great Firewall in China, that like this would have been the wrong way to go about trying to do that. So
yeah, no, like, absolutely.
That seems like a very far-fetched way to handle that. That seems like a little suspicious to me. But also, this is why they have to come out and talk about this stuff. Because you don't want people on Reddit, like, sort of talking about conspiracy theories and stuff. Like, you need to be honest with your player base. And so far, I think they've benefited from a lot of that, having PlayerUnknown himself sort of out on the front lines, you know, talking to people and being honest about the roadmap of the game and everything. Like, why would you not keep that up? That's why so many people have been in your corner since the game has come out, because it's felt like they're being real open and honest with their player base. This sort of thing, you know, it's not like they're going to lose all that goodwill overnight, but it will chip away at the goodwill they've built up. And
exactly.
And it's an unforced error. Like, this is just doesn't need to be in the news. But they caused it presumably because of something they did, and they didn't think about the reaction it might stir up.
Exactly. And again, I don't know the fact that they haven't responded to this at all. And it's like, if you just Google the general, like PUBG ads, China, like there's lots of articles. There's like the subreddit with like thousands and thousands of upvotes of people just putting like all kinds of conspiracy theories that I was reading a little bit earlier in it. It's like, wouldn't you have some kind of, again, maybe they just figure they can't do it. They're just going to do more damage to themselves if they do. But if they were just like, okay, hey, this is an issue and we're looking into it, anything to be like, okay, like, so again, it, the silence sometimes, like, you know, sometimes we say the company's like, okay, you just need to stop talking. I think that No Man's Sky was a good example of that. Remember, he just kept they just kept making it worse. Like everything they would say, be like, okay, it's time to stop, guys. Like, just try to patch in the content that you promised in your game, and we'll see what happens. Whereas this is a situation where, you know, a week goes by, and maybe they figure like it doesn't really matter in the North American market because it's not affecting, you know, North America and other areas or Europe. But you know, I don't know, like you're saying, Brandon, like you're pretty savvy with this stuff. Like to have some, just any kind of statement, even if they don't have a full answer yet, to be like, hey, we're taking a look at this and trying to figure out what's going on, would even be sufficient. You don't have to admit blame necessarily.
You would want to control the message at least.
Like, the messaging.
Yeah, you just don't want the people like on Reddit and on Twitter and stuff making things up and then like spreading, you know, spreading what they think might be the case. Like that's the dangerous part is when you have the top poster in a Reddit thread who like then that ends up being the answer that gets put in like a PC Gamer article. That's not good. That's not good. Why would like any marketing person knows that's not the way you want this sort of thing to be out in the news. Like you want to be controlling the message if possible.
Exactly. Like what do we always say? Like the core of like truth is not truth. Perception is truth, especially online. Like again, maybe some people will dig and try to find it, but if it's just left out there that like, yeah, like, because again, and that's the one thing I'm noticing by reading all these different like comments, like again, people are still playing the game. It's not like a disaster situation, but there are so many people that are like blue hole are just greedy. You know what I mean? Like that perception is already out there, especially after the Fortnite thing. Again, we were talking about it. I see tons of comments on this Reddit thread about Fortnite. Like again, and we talked about how if they just handled the Fortnite thing better, it would have been a blip on the radar. I'm not saying Fortnite wouldn't still have a good player base because it's actually pretty competent, but the way that they have handled these things have been so monumentally poor that it's creating this, it's creating that mob scene at which you will get no matter what if you're a certain level of success, whether it's like music or movies or audio or music or anything like that. But they are, like I said, they're just shooting themselves in the foot over and over and accelerating that kind of hate mongering at a rate that's just like, come on, guys, help yourselves out. It's just like,
and they've, I mean, it's, and they still, you know, as of even today, like over the past week since this came to light out in the news, they have gotten more negative reviews each day on Steam than positive. And like, that's a, you do not,
it's an issue.
Why would you want that trend to continue? Like I assume that not all these negative reviews are because of this issue, but it's, there's like a pretty clear trend that this issue is not helping.
It's affecting
and so why you want to like, you want to turn those reviews around. You don't, even though it's like a lot of people probably ignore the review bombing on Steam, you still don't want that. Like you don't want that to just continue and have negative reviews outweighing positive reviews when a lot of it isn't even about the quality of your game. It's about some outside circumstance. So I'm really surprised that we've seen like a couple notable recent examples of just like completely avoidable errors.
Yep.
Right. And it's a shame. It's a shame because it's like they already get so much positive press coverage. It should be the easiest job in the world to like lead marketing for this game.
Yeah.
You just have to post every single day. Oh, we hit a new player count. Oh, look at us. Another new player count, guys.
Every time you tease any screenshot, it turns into a news article.
Right.
When they tease the new desert map, it's a news article 5 minutes later.
I know.
I hope Bluehole's official response to PC Gamer is one line, and it's use the code Bluehole for 10% off for 3 months.
The VPN service?
Yeah, to the VPN
service. Oh my god.
God, that would be a news article. I would bookmark that news article.
Oh, it'd be so good.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you, Brandon. It's like, we'll just see. We'll continue to see what happens. And again, they've got a lot of unforced errors here, like you're talking about. And will they be able to button it up? I don't know. I don't, I, We'll have to see. I mean, regardless, the game is still growing. Like we said, I'm about to hit 2 million concurrent. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's unprecedented. I'm not saying that, like, no matter what you're going to do, if you're going to be a game like this, there's going to be hate and stuff and people, you know, questioning what you do. But these are not situations that are really ambivalent. These are things that, like, you're talking about that we're like, come on. This is like some basic, common, just good PR stuff, and they've dropped the ball. So we'll see if they actually have a response. I'll be really interested to see. It's been a week and there hasn't been anything, so maybe they're trying to figure out what they're going to say or how they're going to frame it. But and then just give a definitive, like, again, is this stuff that is injected, you know, by third parties, or is this actually something that they made a deal with the VPN?
Yeah, give people some confidence that you know what you're doing and that there's not like a security hole in the game. I mean, like, that's what I would want to address is you.
Yeah,
I'm assuming it was like them that decided to enter a business deal with this VPN service, but it doesn't. It's not clear from these articles. So, like,
right.
You don't really know. And some people might be saying, oh, is PUBG insecure? Could someone just inject something into PUBG? And the answer is almost certainly no. That, like, it's not, you know, it's not like you're going to get a virus or something from PUBG. But not everyone knows that. Like, you've got to get out in front of things like that and say, don't worry. This is something we sanctioned. It's like, it's no big deal. And here's why it's no big deal. Here's what we did.
Yep.
Like, you just, this is so common sense that I'm amazed that they haven't responded in a week.
Yep. Absolutely. So there you go. There's your PUBG, a little bit of, you know, almost hitting one, you know, 2 million, and then a little bit of, you got a little sugar there, and then you got a little bit of the sour. So sweet. I'm sorry. The sweet and the sour. Well, sugar's sweet. So that was close enough, but
sweet and savory. It's a savory flavor.
Yeah, that's true. A little bit savory. But speaking of things that aren't so savory for the game Hawken, which if you guys remember, when I worked at Machinima, I believe we worked directly with this game. And actually, some of the money that we got from that Machinima, I say we, that Machinima got from Google, they actually invested into the world of Hawken. Again, really notable, smart things that Machinima
did. I still remember, but, I think, 2012 at PAX Prime, a lavish Hawken
lavish
party.
It was crazy. Lots of money. Well, it didn't really ever quite go the way that they wanted it to. And Hawken is, again, speaking of things that are being closed down, like AOL, Hawken is being closed and removed from Steam in January. Though I think if you mention AOL in one breath and then Hawken in one breath, they don't quite
say,
are on the same plane.
The reputation of the two services is not quite on the same level of reverence. No. We did miss a great segue opportunity. I should have just pumped this up into news. You don't have two services dying inside of a week very often.
No.
But Hawken already sort of died. I mean, like, people weren't really playing it, but they had this like relaunch, which I think we talked about back in May, that they were talking about how it was like under, you know, I think under new ownership, after what was it, Meteor and Adhesive Games, like that, you know, they seem to like sort of fizzle out. And so I think Hawken, like, new people owned Hawken or whatever, they talked about it was going to be new content and everything. And as it turns out, that's not going to happen.
Yep.
And no, they're straight up removing it from Steam, shutting down the servers, like actual real death on January 2nd, 2018. So,
exactly.
Wow. Yeah, what a wild ride.
It has been, man.
Yeah.
The ups and the downs. And it's funny to read this PC Gamer article because in 2011, I remember it was the work in progress trailer, you know, basically like a tech trailer. You know, PC Gamer called it the best mech game we've seen. That was the title. So, and then it got pulled in the big box, got a lot of investment money and all that, including from Machinima. But it never caught fire.
They had a whole, you know, like comics around it. I think they were talking about making a movie. It was this whole like media campaign, which we have had many conversations over the years about how ridiculous and over the top some of this stuff seemed. You know, and maybe we weren't as crazy as we thought.
That
just having a big budget to make a game like this doesn't make it a successful game.
Yeah. You know? It's funny, they have the work in progress trailer on the embedded into the article, and it really, I mean, again, you put yourself in 2011. I'm gonna put this in chat real quick.
It's a good looking game.
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy. 2011. I mean, again, it really and actually, the game itself, I played it in a few different iterations, not the newest, but it was very, it was a very competent mech game. It didn't have, as far as the way of content went, I think it kind of, I wasn't a mech kind of game fan in general, but it kind of bridged. It wasn't super simmy, but it also wasn't like super, like, it, I mean, you could get in and play it like a shooter, but you could also get really good at it if you knew mech stuff. So I think, again, I don't want to say that the game wasn't competent in some form. It just didn't really, it didn't have the it factor that kept people there, or at least enough people, obviously, to play it.
It wasn't like a stinker. No,
I
think it was a good game. Like, it felt tight. It had really nice visuals. Like, I think all the ingredients were there.
Yeah.
But if I go back and think about, like, the postmortem on it, it just, it never really felt like the focus was on the game. It felt like the focus was on the universe and, like, all the other stuff. When you look at the game and you're like, yeah, this game is good, but it needs to be better to compete with the big dogs the way that you want it to. And that's where it just never seemed to get there.
Absolutely. Like, the cart ahead of the horse, big time, right there. I mean, I think that's, like, a perfect example. And so there you go. Well, Hawken, again, we'll have to pour, man, I'm going to run out of drinks to be pouring out for all these dead services, man, and games. Aim shutting down, Hawken. This is, okay. Well, this next, I don't even know how to segue this. Does anyone want to try to take this next one? I don't know. How can we? I'm brain dead.
From being removed to Steam, to gaining Steam.
Ooh.
Intel has shot back at AMD with a new Core i7 chip that we've had last few podcasts. I feel like we've been talking about new CPUs a bit. You know, AMD has launched.
Yeah.
It started kind of with Threadripper, and then Intel has, you know, their crazy i9 chips, which are fantastic, but obviously very expensive. So a lot of that stuff is like, whatever. It's not a huge deal for gaming. But this one is actually a pretty big deal for gamers. This is the 8700K. So that's the new Coffee Lake architecture. It is the new kind of flagship. I feel like the flagship mainstream chip. Pretty much replacing the 7700K, which is sort of our current, at least for our build guides, and, you know, I think for a lot of people's new gaming builds, this is like the sort of the top mainstream processor at, you know, that about $350 range or so. So it's just affordable enough that it's within the realm of normal people, and pretty much, you know, the you can read through obviously comprehensive reviews if you're interested in the kind of the technical aspects of it, but basically it sounds like it is just a good solid upgrade from the 7700K. There are some things, apparently it runs pretty hot, but you know, that's, I think it seems like a lot of the details is like Intel sort of rushed this to market to compete with AMD, which you don't love, but also, like, I guess what's the alternative? Like, Intel would have sat on their laurels if AMD hadn't launched the Ryzen line. So getting this chip kind of rushed out, even if it's a little bit hot, like, it still results in a better chip for consumers. So that's good. All the, you know, the benchmarks and everything, like, it beats the 7700K across the board. It's a 6-core 12-thread chip. So I think it's, we're finally getting to where the mainstream chips are 6 cores instead of 4 cores. Which I think is probably the where you want to be. Like, you don't really need much more than 6 cores for normal stuff, but it's nice to have 6 instead of 4 when you are doing multi-threaded stuff. The only downside, I think, is that even though in theory the chipset should be compatible with existing motherboards, they are not. So in true Intel fashion, like always, you must upgrade your motherboard to get one of these new chips. It is the same socket, but you cannot use your existing motherboard. So that's kind of that. I know that's probably a shame for some people who like to keep their builds for a while, you know, and just want to upgrade the CPU. Unfortunately, that won't be an option unless you also upgrade your motherboard. So that's the obviously downside. But if you're building a new PC, it sounds like, you know, if you're going to be above probably that $1,000 range, that 8700K is pretty much a no-brainer. I'll be looking to, like, whenever we upgrade our build guides for next month, or maybe later this month, we'll definitely probably be putting the 8700K in our top builds. So keep that in mind if you're looking to build soon, that the 8700K, if your budget allows for it, you almost certainly will want to buy that instead of a 7700K. But anyway, that's, that is where we are in the state of CPUs. It's kind of cool to see AMD and Intel battling a little bit, where before, Intel. Yeah, go ahead.
No, just for them to be on the same level as opposed to like maybe a year ago when Intel was just dominating.
Yeah, it's nice that AMD is not exactly the little brother anymore, where you're just thinking, maybe if I'm buying a super low end PC, I'll think about AMD. They actually have competent offerings kind of across the price line, and actually some of their top end chips are better than Intel for like multi-threaded workloads, but for gaming, it's still unfortunately not quite there. So that's why I think this Intel chip is welcome, because a lot of people buy 7700Ks for gaming rigs. Like that's pretty much what I recommend to people. This is just the sweet spot for a really solid CPU that will last you quite a few years for a gaming rig. Mm-hmm. And so this may actually be like I'm maybe looking to upgrade here within the next 8 months, 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
And upgrading when a new CPU generation comes out is usually a good bet, because it ensures that you get kind of the longest life out of your PC as possible. So it's a good time to upgrade, because video cards are always going to be changing and stuff. That market moves a lot quicker. But CPUs, I think an 8700K, you could easily get 4 years out of an 8700K, if not longer.
Yeah, that thing is looking to be insane. It's just, it's really cool. I've started putting aside, just money for the inevitable, like not a bunch of money, but here and there, just any kind of spare, sizable, to a point where it's like in 2 years, I'll have enough to just make another monster PC. So it's really exciting to just see, CPUs get better, new graphics card generations. And it's like, okay, the jump, like I'm going to see how far I can push this 970, this 16 gigs of RAM, it's nice. I have an i7, but it's like, I'm just waiting for that jump. It's going to feel so sweet.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of crazy too, because like when you go and look at a lot of the reviews, like a lot of the sites, they're not even, I have a 4790K. And the 4790K on the Ars Technica review, it's not even there. Like they're not even testing against these older chips. I think because in some cases, it's obviously a lot more work, but in some cases, like the differences are so drastic compared to a generation from 3-4 years ago, that it's not even worth benchmarking against them anymore, because they're not even like on the same scale. When you're upgrading after a few years, like you'll definitely tell the difference. And just looking at the difference. Go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Just looking at the difference between the 7700K and the 8700K, some of the differences look kind of small, but some of them aren't small. And then if you look at like the generation before that and before that, like some of these kind of feel incremental from one generation to the other. But then when you think about, if my CPU is 3-4 years old, those little incremental differences actually add up to be pretty significant. And so if you're upgrading a CPU after 3 to 5 years, like you're going to feel the difference.
Oh, yeah. Especially like jumping to DDR5 when that hits. It's going to be so good. I remember, to speak more about CPUs not showing up on like benchmarks, I remember upgrading from my 550 Ti and just thinking like, okay, where's the comparison? I don't see it on the graph. oh my God. Yeah. And the thing, it could play League of Legends at 50 FPS, dude.
Nice.
Crazy. Yeah. That's awesome.
Next up, KD, why don't you tell us about Marvel's rough weekend?
Yeah, so Marvel versus Capcom Infinite, which has not had quite the graceful launch which a lot of people have hoped it would. I know, well, actually, let's be honest, a lot of people haven't been hoping there would. The hype for this game just haven't been there. I remember a time
when I thought people thought it was going to be pretty bad. People were really negative on the way it looked and like the even the character designs. People were like, eh.
Yeah, from debut. I remember a simpler time when it was Wynn's Marvel. You know, that was a huge, you know, meme, and that was all that rage. And then it really happened when Dragon Ball FighterZ was announced and all the memes outpoured about how much better that game looked and just I mean, there are some great videos of editings, but so yeah, Marvel versus Capcom Infinite is out, and just to speak more, not really about the game itself as far as like visuals and content. There have been some I think it's interesting to look at what the game has been like going through this past week. So already an Infinite has been discovered with Spider-Man, in which you you use the Reality Stone, which sends out a projectile, and then Spider-Man uses his like web shot ability, which holds someone in place. And using these two moves doesn't build up the meter where you can break out of certain Infinites. And because that doesn't do it, albeit it takes you 90 seconds to kill someone in Spider-Man using this tactic, it is a legit Infinite to use in the game. And you might think, you know, it takes 90 seconds, and how easy are you going to land that in tournaments? In this Kotaku article, it talks about how there are plenty of legitimate setups with, you know, about 5 different characters, maybe even more. And it quickly became obvious, you know, this Infinite could be used a lot of different places. And it's been quite a lot of dispute about that, whether or not it should be banned or whether or not it adds charm to the game. But other than that, just the game just hasn't really been performing well at tournaments. I remember the SoCal regionals were going on. Unfortunately, you know, Filipino champ winning that. I absolutely can't stand that player. That's another topic, though. but just looking at the attendance for these events, the SoCal regionals, 170 players registered for the games. It was this part of Marvel's like Battle for the Stones event where like you would win events and the winner would get like Infinity Stones to use, which would give you powers at the main event. Like you would erase a loss in the set or switch opponents in the bracket. It's kind of weird stuff. But yeah, that first event got only 170 people attending. And then according to this article, for their event in Italy, a scant 13 people signed up.
Hmm.
And for the, given the attendees, there were barely enough people to have 1 8-player bracket in this official tournament, which is just heartbreaking.
That's pretty rough. Then, I was going to say 170 doesn't sound that bad, but then when you only have 13 at like your next event, that's bode well.
Very rough when your main event is lasting, you know, 20 minutes on a stream to get through all these matches. Well, maybe not that short, but you know. And just other controversy happening, like certain this player getting his match reset for something where which tournament was this in? It was in like I don't see which tournament, but it was like a local player versus like a 3-time Evo finalist, and he beat the Evo like finalist 2-0, but he actually had the game comes with an easy combo option. You can just turn on an easy So the judges, after he wins 2-0, are like, wait a minute, he actually has hyper inputs turned on. And then they take that off. He instantly loses. The judges force him to reset the match, although that there was nothing in the official guidelines for it. Was the Fall Classic. There's nothing in the guidelines saying that rule or saying that
was that illegal.
Must be turned off. Yeah, there's nothing saying it was illegal.
That's an oversight.
So, wow. Jesus.
There's some drama going on there.
That's funny. You know,
costing, because when they replayed the match, when he didn't have those hyper inputs on, of course he got stomped.
Right.
Yeah, it was. Hmm. So yeah, I just think it's interesting to keep up with this, and that Marvel, you know, this really, you know, what should be a staple of current fighting games is just really having some, you know, some rough times. So interesting stuff.
Do you think you follow the fighting game community a little closer than I do. Like, do you think this is something where if they, you know, patch the issues out and stuff, this game's going to have pretty good longevity? Cause you know, people like Marvel versus Capcom games in general, but, or do you think, you know, with what was the other fighting game you were talking about that people were comparing it to? The Dragon Ball Z fighting game and stuff.
Right, yeah.
You think there's more competition where it's going to, like, really hurt them overall because the launch was so bad, or will it just kind of die down and people will just continue to play it as a patch.
I think the main problems with from, and this is just going purely off of like reviews I've read, you know, I think the problems with Marvel Infinite are to the point where patches can't fix them, because the thing I've heard most of all is that, like, I mean, functionally, the game, it plays great. It plays like Marvel. It's a fun fighting game. But visually, it's just very lacking. All the character models, if you, there's great libraries of just some of those faces in this game. These models are just terrible. It's a very ugly-looking game, and I think at just taking it at face value, thinking, you know, it's just not the best-looking, that's going to immediately turn a lot of people off. And so I think unless there's some massive reworks, I think what we can only really wait for is maybe Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom Infinite to come out and maybe do like a big rework, but we'll see. I mean, but it's not looking good for Infinite right now. But but I think once Dragon Ball FighterZ comes out, I was watching a lot of gameplay from the closed beta they had going, and it looks like it's going to be able to fill that that gap pretty easily. So I'm looking forward to that.
Gotcha.
So next up is another thing I added, just a quick piece. There was a Square Enix employee was arrested for after it was 2 or 3 years he was doing this, where he would when making contracts with clients, he would deceptively buy game consoles like 3DSs and other systems, saying that the hardware was necessary, and then he would supposedly resell them, resulting in an overall, he made in a loss of 1.4 million yen, which is about $12,000 loss for Square Enix. I thought it was really funny how like he was able to like keep this going on for that long, just making like
a little side money every year with all these consoles he needed and then would resell.
The crazy thing is like, why would you risk this for $12,000?
Yeah, I was. That's the biggest thing. Like, what are you thinking? That's really not.
I mean, it's not crazy.
I like Square Enix's statement. It's just like so tepid. Their statement is, quote, "We're making an effort in employee training to prevent this from happening again."
Right, but it's like, what do you mean? Like that you're not supposed to sell company property that you didn't need in the first place?
And totally by accident. Like, no one said I couldn't do this.
I mean, it's not in the handbook. Like, come on. Like,
I love that statement tells me that someone someone probably emailed Square Enix and they were like, apparently this news outlet wants comment on this guy, and he he lost like $12,000, and they were like, yeah, for Square Enix, like $12,000 over the course of like a few years, like who cares? Like, yeah, we're gonna try, we're gonna put it in the training. It'll be a slide that says, hey, don't do this.
We're gonna redo our training video.
Toss in a slide with this guy's picture on it and be like, hey, don't resell these, like, don't put hardware you don't need in contracts and just like, then don't resell them, for personal profit. Like, maybe just don't do those things.
They check that off the training list. All right, let's move on.
Pretty simple concept to grasp, but
that's funny. Dang.
That's crazy.
That'd be a shame to throw your career away over
for $12,000.
And also, like, this actually seems like it would be a lot of work too. Like, you would have to order all the handhelds. Like, where are you going to store the handhelds? And then are you like taking them and shipping them yourself? Because like you can't. It's not like you can take them to the mailroom and be like, hey guys, can you mail this out for me?
He would just stop by GameStop on his drive home and stuff his 3DS. Like, damn, dude, where do you get $12,000 worth of 3DSs? Like, I just keep getting them in. Wow. That's all right. Well, he'll be in a Japanese prison. I don't know what kind of vile shit goes on there, but he'll be interrogated by the muscular, you know, the convicts asking him what he's locked up for, and he'll say he's been legally selling company 3DSs.
I thought you were going to say by the muscular robot guards or prisoners, because it's Japan, so right. I'm assuming they've automated prison at this point.
I may have done the math incorrectly here, but I was looking at, so say over 2 years, he sold $12,000 worth of consoles. I'd use the 3DS as a benchmark, since that's the one they referenced. Yeah. And it's about $200. So that means he sold about 30 of these things a year.
Oh my god.
He's just like giving him away his Christmas presents or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like when I first read this article, I imagined him accepting crates of consoles, but no, it's about 30 3DSs. 30 a year.
Oh man. Like if you see this in a news article, you want to believe it's like this criminal enterprise. Like if I saw this guy made like $1 million over a few years, I'd be like, okay, yeah. so he was pretty crazy. Serious about it. But this is like it could have been an accident. If $12,000 in a hardware contract with some vendor, like that could be,
right.
That could be right. an accident. But right. I mean, I guess it's not, but it's just, no. It seems super funny that it's like he gets presumably fired and I guess indicted for $12,000 of hardware.
Hope it was worth it, man.
Yeah.
Damn. In lighter news, in more, now we're really going down the weeb rabbit hole, gentlemen.
Yeah, you're closing out this with weeb news.
Some weeb shit, yeah. I'll say my piece, but, actually.
That Square Enix article is just a transition to talking about games from that region.
Yeah, we go from really eccentric, fighting game to really eccentric media, staple of a country being Japan. And now we're really going down the rabbit hole. No, but, Nioh, which came out this year, feudal Japan Dark Souls like action game, is going to be coming to PC pretty soon, November 7th, as Nioh Complete Edition, which is going to have all of the DLC that came out for the game. So I'm pretty excited. I never got around to it. Now I feel even less inclined to get around to it because I'll just be buying it a second time on PC after buying it on PS4 and never playing it. So I'm in an awkward place, but it's kind of weird. It talks about how the PC version is going to have the two different visual modes like you had in the console version, where you have action mode, which focuses on frame rate and kind of dumbs down resolution and anti-aliasing, and then you have movie mode, which locks it at 30 and brings up the resolution anti-aliasing. I'm like, what are these two distinct options doing on PC when you should be able to just custom tweak around everything and have, the best of both? I mean, yeah, I just found that weird. Hopefully it won't be, an option that either high frame rate or high resolution on a PC. That would just be ridiculous.
Yeah, hopefully, it doesn't say in the article, but I mean, hopefully it's not like, it says that action mode aims for a stable 60 FPS. Hopefully that means it's not just locked at 60. And yeah. You're right, like, I guess it's fine if you want to give these choices. But I would really hope there's an advanced settings menu where you can actually just set all the stuff that's available to customize on PC.
Definitely, yeah, that would be a necessity. I'm also seeing the Steam version is going to include a new item, which is a samurai helmet that just has a couple of big-ass dumb red valves in the center on the top of your head, just to, in valve fashion.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I thought that was good. At least that screenshot of that. But
yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I don't know if this game has PvP, but everybody's running around with the Valve helmet. God damn it. At least it's not, the Hatsune Miku helmet with the long flowing blue hair that everyone's wearing. Anyways, but yeah, Nioh is a really well-received game, and I'm excited for a lot of people to try it out. Finally, in the quickest of quick hits, God Eater 3 was announced. That's pretty much it. I've never played God Eater 1 or 2.
Okay.
I just know that God Eater recently made it to PC. This game has not been announced for any console. It's just been announced that it's being made, but hopefully it gets a PC release. I'm sure there's got to be one listener out there, at least one listener that has played God Eater and cares about this being included in the news. And for that, you're welcome.
Gotcha. It was for that that person.
Yeah. All right, fair. One audience try member. That. Yeah. Okay. I'm looking out for everybody, man.
as a quick palate cleanser, I was curious at looking at the demise of Hawken, and I looked at the 24-hour peak for Hawken on Steam, 129. Maybe not as bad.
Oh my
as you might have thought.
Really. I actually checked 24, that.
24-hour peak for Lawbreakers, 127.
No. I was just gonna ask. They have two less players.
I could not help myself.
I didn't go one podcast without kicking Lawbreakers in the stomach again.
I didn't want to. I could not help it when I saw this player count. I thought I have to look.
It's just using stats. We're using hard science.
Yeah, these are objective facts.
And it's just brutal.
Hawken 129.
Like, when you consider they deem it not worth it to keep their servers up for Hawken when there's 129, yes, not many, of a game 3 years old that no one truly cares about and a game that just came out, like Lawbreakers has 127. That's it's crazy.
Make of it what you will. These are just, I have presented the numbers objectively without comment.
Jesus.
71 playing Hawken now, 67 playing Lawbreakers. These are numbers. These are just objective.
It's sort of painful to know that they haven't given up on Lawbreakers at this stage. I mean, like, obviously, because it came out so recently, they don't want to.
Yeah.
But it's just it feels like I'm watching something die on the street right now, and it's trying to crawl to safety. And I'm like, I want it to die because there will be less suffering.
It's kind of like watching a car crash, and just you're not really sure at what point it gets the worst, but it's not, you're wondering if it's there yet, and like I just want to keep checking every now and then to see, like, the game deserves better than this.
Yeah, I think they deserve better than Hawken, okay?
Right.
Yes. I think objectively it is. They're different, but yeah, I think overall.
I think the smartest thing for Lawbreakers to do, because right now, let's face it, there is no hope for this game. Like, I don't know what they can do if they continue this release model. I think the best thing they can do for this game, give it a couple months, hit the development studio, add maybe some new characters, rework the UI so it isn't complete shit, make the game more accessible, and launch it free to play. You know, I mean, if you want people
done in the first place, they should have kept the free to play.
I think we're definitely only a month or two away from that announcement, where I'm sure we will talk about it on the cast.
And even then, I don't see myself playing it. No. I remember the beta was confusing. I remember at LAN, I would walk by and I would see Titty sitting down playing, and I'm like, this is Lawbreakers. And then I just walk away like, I can't watch this. That's some work definitely needs to be done. This article was even about Lawbreakers. We went from, I've just done that.
Hear me out. I think they should free to play launch it in Asia and focus on that market or something, or South America. I'm dead serious. And go with microtransactions and like get it, because North America, it ain't happening, honey. And I don't think it's happening in Europe either. So again, I'm not saying you can't get the game on that platforms over there, but like really make a conceited push and a conceited effort and be like, okay, we're going to really focus. We're going to get somebody in China to publish this thing, and we're going to make some money, even if it just means we got to split 10% of the profits. Cause I mean, I don't know. Like you said, they should consider pivoting.
I think
they have to pivot, or they make a battle royale game mode. I'm not even kidding. And it feels like there are two options. I'm trying to think of any way that they can bring this back. And like you said, even if it goes free to play, I've played it. Like I actually think you're right.
I would not if tomorrow they announced that they were like launching a battle royale mode, I would not be surprised one bit.
Oh my god,
I really wouldn't. I really wouldn't blame them either.
No. It's gonna be the new pivot of like, all right, let's, you know, because it is the mode is the hot ish right now. So
yeah. I really want to log into PUBG and just see an ad for Lawbreakers in the corner. That would just kill me. I would crumble.
Lawbreakers VPN service.
So I think instead of talking about games that are dead, we should talk about some games that are just coming to life.
Nice segue.
In our new release section, baby. Let's go. Here we go. We got some good stuff this week. First up, Deadbeat Heroes by Deadbeat Productions from Square Enix.
By Square Enix, they had enough money left after reselling the hardware from that guy to publish this game. They're going to make it all back.
12,000, just enough budget for this game, it looks like. Sorry, that was mean.
What the hell is this? I'm not gonna lie.
It's a weird art style. It's a local co-op only, sadly. It's a 3D brawler where you dodge bullets, steal superpowers. Mainly, there's this one feature that they advertise in key features. It says Twitch streaming. Chat appears in the news ticker. Chatters become baddies and are featured in end-of-level credits.
All right. When I was looking at the art style, I thought to myself, this looks like YouTube fodder. And I guess if they're trying to integrate the same thing, this is targeting content producers for sure.
There you go. APL's going to be streaming this, so we'll go down the alley. You'll see an enemy named Furious.
No,
all right.
Don't do it.
I mean, I'm curious. Like, what do you... I actually think that's like an interesting feature. It's sort of one of those things where like why not do that?
Sure, it's
because
easy.
It makes it potentially a little more streamable than sort of this local co-op game might be otherwise.
Sure, that's true. I mean, it's not a bad thing. I don't know. I may be judging it too harshly. Maybe it's really fun to play, but
APL, listen. There's wall running.
Oh, really? Is that one of the features?
Says you can air dash and wall run through London. And when I see wall run, I just see purchase. I just see money made.
Okay. Well, there you go. The fact that it's only local multiplayer.
That seems kind of odd that you'd have a feature about being online and then just be only a local co-op.
Well, it says multiplayer and local multiplayer. Does it mean it's both?
Yeah,
one looks like player local. Yeah, you're right. That's an issue.
That's too bad. Hmm. All right. No word on a price yet, but this comes out October 10th, approximately 1 day and 11 hours at the time of this recording.
There you go.
Next up, Middle of Earth Shadow of War comes out that same day, which I have not played the first, the Shadow of Mordor. But from the reviews I've been seeing, everything I've been reading about this game looks like a pretty... Not just another Shadow of Mordor. It looks like they're making some big improvements. Although I am hearing some rumors that the true ending of the game is locked behind either grinding or using microtransactions to reach a certain level currency, which is just fun. Just a great design choice.
Good feature.
Yeah. But no, if you're into that, get ready to request time off. I think it might be a little bit late now, but you know. Lock your doors, close your blinds,
People like Shadow of Mordor, so
they did. Yeah,
I didn't play it, but I know a lot of people really seem to like that game. So,
yeah, I haven't played it yet, but I don't know if it was the most recent one, but the last big Steam sale they had, the Game of the Year edition of Shadow of Mordor was on sale for $3.99.
Yeah,
and
I was gonna say I think I own it, even though I haven't played it.
Right, that's a lot of people.
And also, you know it's good because in the official name, there are not one, but two trademark symbols. Middle Earth trademarked and Shadow of War trademarked. So the IP licensing for this, locked up. Do not think about making anything called Middle Earth or Shadow of War without talking to WB Games. Just don't think about it.
That's right.
Nope.
I actually just got an email asking you to appear at court for thinking about it.
Oh, that reminds me. Someone in chat asked me how my jury duty went.
Oh, yeah. You didn't talk about that.
Mainly, I filled out a paper, sat for 2 hours, and someone came out and said, there's been a development. The interpreter did not show up.
Oh.
And so the case was thrown, or not thrown out, but it was canceled. And I fulfilled my civic duty.
That's good. So, yeah. That's a good outcome, honestly.
Yeah. Good for you. Definitely. Not being, you know, sequestered or anything.
Yeah.
Something equally as horrifying as jury duty. Evil Within 2.
Nice.
Thank you.
There you go. Coming out October. You're making up your own segues. You got to bank this kind of stuff so that you can, instead of having to be topical with segues, you just start talking about something else, and then you create your own segue.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah, exactly.
That was masterful.
Thank you. You know, I've been working for so long, and to get that, I appreciate it. Anyways, no, but
don't ruin it, Katie.
All right, let's go. So, The Evil Within 2. It's been 3 years since the first one. It feels like Evil Within 1's been out for a while. And yeah, I'm excited for this one. I liked the Evil Within 1. I think sometimes it got a little crazy with the amount of... They started throwing in enemies that could shoot at you. I think there are just way too many stealth sections in that game. But from what I'm seeing here, it looks like, you know, the movement is more fluid. It looks visually, it looks like a really, really well-made game. And yeah, so I'm excited to, I really want this to be good, you know. I want it to be, you know, being made by Shinji Mikami, I want it to be the next big Resident Evil, but I'm looking into, because I remember when they did a sale for Evil Within 1 and it was only $5, and I didn't play any of the DLC, and those were on sale too. And I'm reading reviews like they're just filled with stealth sections.
Yeah, I played that entire game in the course of like multiple months on Darkroom with Lester and Gina. And it was hard because it was like, we'd only play it once a week, so it was hard to like be like, remember like what parts was which because the game's so fucking shit crazy. But there were certain it was broken into like four or five main sections, I feel like. And like certain sections were really good and other ones were like you said, like what the fuck is the stealth section? Or like it just didn't really like vibe. But overall there was a lot of disturbing stuff and it was hard. Like an inventory like again, inventory management and like you had to it was definitely brutal. So it'd be interesting to see how this game is. Maybe more refined experience, but
yeah, I think the Evil Within 1, you know, first half, maybe first two thirds of that game was really good.
Yeah.
So then it's definitely a bit more of that. Also, I hope the game makes fucking sense this time because that first, I mean, you're talking, you know, having no idea what's going on. Like one playthrough, you'll be completely lost. I mean, I'm not going to spoil it, but like,
I vaguely remember the end of that game, but I couldn't. All I remember is we were just like, what the fuck? What?
Yeah.
What
does that mean? Oh, I landed right next to this rocket launcher with 20 rockets, I woke up, and then I died, and then I woke up. Anyways, it was
exactly
crazy. So yeah, hopefully they learn.
As our resident new releases expert here, I need your professional opinion on this. So The Evil Within 2. All right, it's coming up on, you know, we're in October, right? Halloween season.
Right.
So the Evil Within 2, obviously, this is when you want to be launching, right? Leading into Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
But and then, Friday the 13th. But then, perfect. October, Friday the 13th is in October. So you're just, you're flipping out, right? You are just flipping out because this marketing writes itself. How many horror games are coming out on Steam on Friday, October 13th? It's got to be more than a dozen.
Yeah, oh, it's got a ton.
I think you're right. Trying to hit that mark. I already know movies are coming out on 13th, like plenty of horror movies. So, I mean, I just going through like new releases. I did go through like all the, you know, indie games as always. There was a lot of shite this week, but there were plenty of horror games. So yeah,
like you couldn't ask for anything better. If this game doesn't sell, it will not be because of the marketing department. They're just going to sit back and watch the cash roll in.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. This is an ideal horror game release time. Like
this isn't would you say something like I don't know, Lawbreakers launched at the same time. What game was launching when Lawbreakers came out? I forget, but it was a pretty big title. But then after that, they did a free weekend, and that was when the Call of Duty.
Yeah,
I also have to talk about the shit on Lawbreakers again. But they did their free weekend when the Call of Duty World War II beta was free.
So stupid.
I don't. Part of we were talking about this before, but I swear to God, like Cliffy B, this is not like he's burning it down from the inside. Like there's something going on in turn. Like this has nothing to do with.
Yeah.
There's something we're missing here because it doesn't make any sense. You go like, okay, well, let's wait till there's a slower week and try to do that.
Yeah, let's try to compete. Our game is already dying. Let's try to compete with another player base, let alone the Call of Duty player base.
Like, I just didn't. Anyway, so again, not to continue to drag Lawbreakers through the mud, but when you said smart like launch decisions and times.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I just looked it up. I scrolled through my little Windows calendar. We're not going to get another opportunity like this until 2023, people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If you're making a horror, any sort of horror IP, like if you're not launching this Friday, why even bother launching?
Totally.
If it was 2016 and Evil Within 2 production is finished, just delay the game for a year.
Yep, just wait it out.
Yeah, I see on the 13th such horror titles as Lumberjack VR.
Oh my god! No!
Terrifying. Game,
also October 13th, Holy Potatoes, What the Hell? That sounds pretty scary.
Is that the real title? Holy Potatoes, What the Hell?
That is indeed, with some punctuation. So wow, you have to determine the voice inflection yourself. There's a lot of stuff on the 13th. Definitely lots of horror games, from what I can tell. Actually, the only one that has a real horror sounding name is Call of Nightmares, and this looks like just not a good game. This looks this looks like the kind of game we should not be talking about on the cast.
Yeah, it was not a very good week for aspiring indie developers. Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna drop it in chat. You can just enjoy that.
Oh, let's take a look at this. Surely it can't be worse than the Mexican.
Is that the trailer?
These zombie sprites here.
How does this shit? This dude paid to get this on. Like, why would you even pay? What are you doing?
The
blocking
animation for the UMV.
Audio listeners, please go on Steam, watch the trailer for Call of Nightmare.
In the trailer itself, when he's getting like 3 FPS, when at certain sections, like when he like drags it
along in that PC history collection that I was talking about earlier.
This
is 3D technology right there.
Oh man.
I mean, I don't want to talk badly if this is just like some fun project someone did, you know. But I mean, look, if you're putting it on Steam for sale, well, maybe it's not for sale. I don't know if he's going to actually sell it.
Listen,
he
calculated. He's releasing on October 13th.
But that's,
I don't
that's
care
the thing.
If it's a project.
Yeah,
he's
it's like, you know what?
Airs.
You know what? More power to you. Even if this game is not any good, you lined it up with Friday, October 13th. Like, you did it.
Yeah. That's points. But whenever you do, don't go on his other made games and look at Last Soldier. If you thought that a game couldn't look worse, I mean, I know we're going off on a tangent, but Jesus Christ. This came out August 11th.
This guy's got a back catalog of games to try.
He's really filling up his game dev resume when he ultimately applies to Crytek or, you know, other reputable CD Projekt Red. That's what I was thinking of. I don't know.
All right. Well, I didn't mean to derail your new releases section, but your last one here also releases on Friday, October 13th, because of course it does. Tell us more about
Absolutely. It doesn't even have to be a horror title at this point. It's just a very convenient title to be on. But yeah, Dungeons 3. I don't know much about the Dungeons series. I know that there have been a first and second game.
I wonder how long it took them to come up with the name for their franchise in the boardroom when they were sitting around and going, what should we... Well, there's Dungeons, Doug. All right. You know, like in a world where like people really take a lot of like the, you know, names are long or they're like, you're like, okay, what is that? It just sounds so plain. It's like Dungeons.
I'm looking at
Dungeons 1, Dungeons 2, Dungeons 3. There's Dungeons, Doug.
Right.
That's what we do.
I'm looking at these reviews and they're definitely quotes from game journalists, but they don't really say anything positive about the game. They have Rock, Paper, Shotgun saying Dungeon Keeper meets Warcraft.
Right.
Okay. Polygon says more evil doing above and below the realm.
Yeah,
okay. Really advertising. PC Game Examiner says it's welcome news that we'll be getting a Dungeons 3.
That's the highest praise they could find. It's welcome news.
Really, the only thing worse than this is when there are just incredibly positive reviews and they're under Steam community user or just.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's. It might be great. Could be great.
It's the third game in the series, so they're probably doing something.
Yeah.
None of those are reviews. Those are all from earlier this year. Those are all just announcement articles.
Yeah, announcements.
But you know, hey, I guess you gotta put what you have there, and you know, God, it's
you know,
welcome news. That's tepid praise. So,
I mean. To say more things positive about this game, at least the Steam screenshots look to be actual gameplay footage.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, the game looks okay. I've never played this series, but it looks It looks interesting. I can't really tell what type of game it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
like some of the screenshots, I was thinking it almost looks like an RTS.
May I refer to you to Rock Paper Shotgun's Dungeon Keeper Meets Warcraft? If that helps you at all, I don't know if it doesn't help me, but. I was just thinking Diablo is what I was thinking. Yeah,
I can see that. With the logo especially, it just looks like they put it in. You've seen that meme where it's like, hey, man, can I copy your homework? Yeah, just change it a little bit so it doesn't look obvious. It's Dungeons 30. Man. But yeah, overall, pretty good new release section this week. Two bangers.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah. Not bad at all.
Let's jump into some viewer questions.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's jump into our first one from Queen Cipriana. We do this every time. What do you guys think it is? Is it Cipriana? Cipriana.
Cipriana. Right? It's a soft
Cipriana. Cipriana. Yeah, with the Y. With the Y. Yeah. What do you guys think of pumpkin spice? Pretty simple question, but possibly very inflammatory, depending on.
I think if there had been a noun on the end of pumpkin spice, I might have had a stronger opinion. But it's hard to say because pumpkin spice, some things are good, but like the where everyone's mind goes at the start is pumpkin spice lattes, which I really don't care for. Right. I like pumpkin things in general, like pumpkin bread, pumpkin. If you're tossing some pumpkin spice into something else, I might like it. But I don't like pumpkin spice lattes. There are some other pumpkin related things that I don't care for. But I can't, I don't know. Pumpkin spice is like, it's so, I think, divisive depending on what it's in.
Definitely. Well, my issue is, and again, I don't care for pumpkin spice. I don't do anything in the pumpkin spice thing. It's when I went to my local grocery store that I shop at pretty recently, and this is the prime pumpkin spice time. And it is, products that have absolutely no business where you're just like, why did you pumpkin spice this? You only pumpkin spiced it because it's, the thing to do. That's really what irks me. And I really need to know if supermarkets and businesses do this, there must be, like, if they're adding pumpkin spice to all these different things, they must be doing it because it works, right? Like, people are buying this stuff. I want to know the people that are, because I don't know very many people that, like, I feel like I talk to most people and they're like, yeah, all right, I might have a pumpkin spice latte or something, but not to the fandom of things that I'm seeing that I'm just like, there was like a pumpkin spice. What did I see that really triggered me? There was like a pumpkin spice tea, cold tea thing. And again, whatever, it might be fine, but I was just like, well, that's not neat.
I kind of agree with you, Scott, that I think it kind of seems like pandering to people just looking to buy stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't. Like, who's it for? Like, I haven't met too many people that are like, oh, yeah, I got all the pumpkin spice stuff. I just don't. Maybe I'm missing out because I'm not into the whole scene, the pumpkin spice scene. is there anybody in here that can tell me? Like, you guys.
That belongs on someone's Twitter bio. Lover of pumpkin spice.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God.
Good examples in chat. Pumpkin spice laundry detergent. Just let's take it all the way.
Yeah.
I do have a pumpkin spice hand soap that's very nice.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think hand soap is like, hand soap is fine. That's stuff that you're replacing often enough that you can get seasonal stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that makes sense to me why Bath and Body Works would do pumpkin spice stuff. But I agree with Scott that some of the things that they throw pumpkin in, it just feels like sort of pointless marketing for the fall season.
Right. Exactly. Maybe I'm overestimating what they like. Maybe they just throw a bunch of shit at the wall and are like, okay, none of that sold. That was all just a waste. But maybe it's worth for them to try it out. I don't know. But I was just struck by how many the amount of products that they had. Where I'm like, it just doesn't seem like people would buy this stuff. But I don't know. Maybe they do. I'm trying to look at like some of the products that really triggered me here on the website of that supermarket, but okay. So like, again, so also take this question, like you said, soap, what things do you find acceptable? Even like a drink or whatever, like that's fine. Like if you like that flavor.
I think I echo the general sentiment that pumpkin spice in pastries, I enjoy.
Sure.
But we covered this last week. I drink coffee black. So flavored coffee is definitely not for me.
Gotcha.
Would you get like a pumpkin? You wouldn't get like a pumpkin roast or something.
No, No, absolutely not.
Okay. All right, good. That was a test.
Good, yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been the wrong goddamn answer. What about you, Katie? What about Indiana? Like, how's the pumpkin spice scene there?
I mean, a lot. It's pretty
scene.
Much the same.
I mean, it really
the scene.
Everyone walking around with their PSLs over in Indy.
Oh, right. God. I mean, pumpkin spice is fine. It's not something I've had it like a couple times before. It's not something I really go crazy over. It's not. I mean, it's not especially popular where at least. Like, I always hear memes about everyone going crazy for pumpkin spice, but I don't really see people going that nuts for it. I mean, I don't work at a Starbucks, so I don't see what people go for it. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
I bet if you work at Starbucks, if you can't really embrace the whole, like, getting excited about seasonal drinks, I bet you probably just hate the entire autumn because it's, like, all pumpkin spice lattes.
Right.
I bet there are some people that come in and are just super jazzed to get pumpkin spice lattes.
Oh yeah. Exactly. Can I give you one of the things that just triggered me? By the way, I'm on the website and I'm just, again, they didn't have everything that they had in store on this. They have let me see if I can bring it up again to make sure that I'm not spice. Okay. They have a Beemster pumpkin spice Gouda. Cheese that they're selling.
What?
Pumpkin spice Gouda. I'm not kidding. What? Am I right to be like, what the fuck is happening?
That, like, what is this? Okay. Why now, are we? Now I definitely understand where you're coming from. That seems. Like,
I'm literally
going to
link. I'm going to link it right here. Just so that I can prove to you that it exists, chat. I just linked it to you. They were carrying that, and I was like, pumpkin spice Gouda. First of all, it's repulsive. It's just, I'm throwing it up in my mouth thinking about that, but.
How about this? I just found pumpkin spice toothpaste.
Oh, Jesus Christ, God!
What?
Oh, my God. It has 2 stars on Amazon.
God. Oof, so awful.
Man, that's,
God, like, can you imagine just brushing your teeth with that?
This is a premium Dutch cheese. Let me tell you their slogan for the pumpkin spice Gouda. This savory cheese delivers the taste of autumn. Don't miss the limited time offering. We don't – cheese and autumn are not – like we don't – pumpkin spice. Oh, I hate the whole thing. I hate everything about it. You know what it should be? It should be a nice grilled cheese or something like that. You don't need to add pumpkin spice to make it autumn. It's just cooler naturally, so you can eat like things like soup and grilled cheese. You don't have to add pumpkin spice to it to make it autumn. God, oh.
Yeah, by the nature of what you're offering, people will like it certain times of year.
Oh, God.
I think it. I guess it must just be that people go for the novelty factor. You know, yeah. it's like I guess if you like pumpkin stuff, you'd be like, ooh, this pumpkin Gouda. I like pumpkin. And I like Gouda cheese, but I've never combined the two.
Oh,
so let me give it a shot.
I mean, maybe.
How about some pumpkin spice Oreos?
I mean, that's not something I would want. But also, I mean, Oreos are manufactured, and you know it's going to be sweet. So there's going to be just like this light tinge of pumpkin flavor. That's not. I feel like that's a little. That's a little different because, like, any, it's not natural flavoring in Oreos anyway.
No.
I think the pumpkin, where it's like natural pumpkin flavoring and stuff, that feels weird to me, like in cheese and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, Oreos is that they're dry. They're part of the problem. They gotta sell seasonal stuff.
They absolutely are.
They gotta sell seasonal stuff, you know, because your mom is gonna buy the pumpkin Oreos because it's that time of year and that's going to get you in the, you know, in the festive mood for Halloween and Thanksgiving. So I think maybe we just underestimate the amount of people that want to be excited about the time of year. And you got to brute force your way there. So you know what? If it's pumpkin Gouda that puts you over the line, then by God, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, you know what? Judgment. Well, not a judgment-free zone. If I see you with that shit, I'm gonna be like, I'm not. I'm gonna leaving your dinner party pretty quickly. The other one I wanted to mention that I found on the Wegmans website was pumpkin spice sausage.
that they were selling along with the meats and cheeses.
Oh no.
I again.
You've definitely turned me more negative on this. Cause I think I don't love the experimentation. Like pumpkin, let's stick to just the conventional things, right? Pumpkin bread, pastry, that's 100% legit. But pumpkin spice and just these like random other types of food, that feels like pandering to me.
It does. It's like pumpkin spice can stay in its lane. It can be, like you said, like cookies, drinks, sweet products that make sense, right? We don't need to venture into the savory. Just like we said, how ridiculous it sounds that the Beemster pumpkin spices, it's a taste of autumn. It's like, no one has ever put Gouda and autumn together in their head. Like, have you? Like, I don't ever, there's no need. We just, it's a far reach.
Look, big pumpkin does well enough every year, okay?
That's right.
You don't need to feed the propaganda machine.
No, exactly. Pumpkin spice, hashtag stay in your lane. That's how I feel about it. Just like, get out of here. But again, thank you for that question. Vic Satchel asked us via Twitter. He said, what are some of your favorite albums to have come out so far in 2017? And or what bands have you been listening to recently? So he gives us an out if you don't have anything super recent from 2017 that you've been listening to. First of all, do any of you guys have any recent albums that you would like to talk about? And then if not, what are we listening to?
It's just Despacito over and over.
Dude, it's a banger.
I have not listened to a full album since I think the last full album I listened to was maybe Worlds from Porter Robinson, which is like 2014.
I think so, 2014, 2013.
But I guess recently I've been listening to a lot of Bastille.
Nice. Great band. I have, so from 2016, close to 2017, John Bellion's album, The Human Condition, is a solid recommend that I could give you. Really good album front to back. Everyone just knows the one song he has that was on the radio. What was it called? God damn it, I can't even remember the name of it. All Time Low, which is like the most notable, but it's not even close to the best track on that album. There's a lot of really good songs, decent songs on there. It's like a pop album, but it's got some rap. It's got different elements in it. It's solid. An album that I started listening to recently that came out in 2017, there's this band called King's Kaleidoscope, they're a Christian band, quote unquote, but this album is not necessarily super overt. They're on Tooth and Nail, which, you know, growing up, I listened to there's a lot of bands on Tooth and Nail that I really liked. And it's like a 30-minute album, but give it a try. I think you really like it. It's hard to really put them into a box. They do a lot of like electronic and analog soundscape kind of stuff, but, really, really good like musicianship and, kind of the way that they arrange is really cool. So King's Kaleidoscope is kind of a weird one that you might want to check out. And then I'm always listening to, man, a lot of electronic stuff always. And of course my standbys, you know, I got my emo on deck. I got my Taking Back Sunday, my Senses Fail, if I'm feeling really edgy, maybe a little bit August Burns Red in the car turned up, you know, super loud. If I want some, you know, some metal.
August Burns Red has some Christmas songs.
They do. They absolutely do. I have one of their Christmas albums or EPs.
I only know that because there are very few like rock bands that do holiday songs. And so August Burns Red just comes up in like every single search for like
great
rock or metal holiday songs. It's just like, it's literally this one August Burns Red album.
That's great. Yeah, they do. What about you, Katie? What you've been listening to? And Brandon?
I'm a terrible, terrible listener of music. I'll find like two bands or two albums I like and just stay on those for months. Awful. I really need to listen to more. I think the last new thing I listened to, like Paramore's new album was all right.
Mm-hmm.
And like Tyler, the Creator's new album was good.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, honestly, I just, if I turn on Spotify, it's immediate Coheed, Panic at the Disco, Young the Giant, any of those.
I was about to say Young Vagina, and I was
Tongue Vagina.
Is that like a new rat? Like, that's gonna be my rap name. Man. Like, Or Lil Vagina.
Lil Vagina, Young Vagina.
I absolutely was mentally preparing to have to ask what that was.
Young Vagina. Oh, like it's actually, yeah, it's not. I didn't know where you were going. I just heard the beginning.
Clarify real quick. Yeah,
it's Y-U-N-G, Vagina.
Yeah, exactly. Probably going to get some questions if you... that's good. I have no shame in that, man. Hey, the Coheed. I mean, yeah, same for me. I'm always Coheed on different points.
Yeah, I really need to pick up more stuff.
I haven't. I listen to like a decent amount of what I think is new music when I work out. Like I've been listening to a lot more Spotify lately, and so like the Discover Weekly has been pretty good. So I've been listening to a bunch of new bands, but like I don't listen to the band. It's just like, oh, I like this one song, so I'll save that one. One theme that keeps coming up in the songs that I've found is a lot of them are rock covers of just like popular, you know, pop songs. Mm. Like there's a cover of Royals, which is pretty good. Mm. It's a cover of Lose Yourself by Eminem. There's like two different covers by two different bands that were okay. There's a cover of Shell Shocked, the rap song. There's like quite a few good metal or rock or metal covers of some of those things. So I don't know if they all came out in 2017, because Spotify is just like, they could have come out anytime. I don't really know. But I think they're probably fairly new if they're on the Discover Weekly. So
nice.
That's my answer.
Cool. All right. Good question from Big Satchel. All right. And our next one comes from Lewis, and it's via email. And he says, "Greetings from the Midwest, gentlemen. My question for you this evening pertains to one of my favorite things in the world, bread. If you could only eat one type of bread, wheat, sourdough, rye, etc., for the rest of your life, what type would you choose? All bread products you would eat, from sandwiches to French toast to dinner rolls, will be made of the bread you choose for the remainder of your days. Under the circumstances of the situation, whatever bread you choose is always readily available for you, and you will not have to concern yourself with the acquisition of the bread you choose. Thank you, gentlemen, for your guidance in all things memes and cuisine." And before we answer, I have to say, this is somebody that has listened to this podcast for a long time, because he went in detail, because he knew we would break this down and be like, do we have to get the bread? Are we making it? Is it easy?
The boundaries he's placed around this question are perfect for just igniting discussion instead of having us focus on the minute details that he didn't address.
That's good. This guy, hey, Lewis, you're a hardcore listener, man. I appreciate it. All right. So there you go. So just like you said, you can get the bread whenever, but it will replace all, you know, bread that you ever eat. Wheat, sourdough, rye. He just gives a few examples. I mean, there's tons of different kinds of bread, obviously.
I feel like because it replaces everything, I want to go with kind of the lowest common denominator, just like some, you know, Texas toast type white bread, you know, you can do sandwiches, like you can do French toast. You can have it with like barbecue. It's not like, true, it doesn't work great for the kind of dinner roll situation. Like, no. I guess it would kind of be a shame if you go to like a really nice restaurant and they have like some real nice bread and some spreads or something. You would just be like, oh, let me put this spread on some pedestrian white bread. But I feel like that happens so infrequently that I would just want, like, I wouldn't want to lose sandwiches, you know, to like some special type of bread.
I totally agree with that, because I was thinking about this, and again, you might miss out on some of the stuff, like the, you know, dinner roll. You're not going to get the texture kind of that you would get maybe from other kinds of bread if it was just white bread or wheat bread. But
I guess you would lose out on like pumpkin bread and that sort of thing, because you would just have to like put pumpkin spice on white bread.
Well, there you go. You could just buy it like a buy some pumpkin spice and just fucking put some butter.
But I think in this scenario, lose pumpkin bread either way, because like I'm not going to choose pumpkin bread. That can't replace everything.
God, no. Yeah, I'm with you. I think I just go for. I think I'm going for just plain white bread, because it's so versatile. Like you said, French toast, grilled cheese. You know, you can do a lot with it. You can do barbecue on top of it. It's good for you know, I think there's other better sandwich breads, but again, like I love a nice sourdough. I love all that stuff, but I don't think I would want it to replace everything.
Mm.
Oh, man, I do love sourdough though. Would I be okay with like, cause you can, sourdough is great with French toast. Sourdough is great for sandwiches. Sourdough with barbecue, not really. Doesn't really work
you'd
as
have
much.
You'd have to get a little more creative than you'd normally be comfortable getting with bread like that.
I think like the big thing to consider here is even if the bread isn't ideal, it could still work. I mean, when you use the bread that's less ideal, it's not like it's going to be terrible. It's not like you could never eat that again. It's just not going to be maybe the most perfect ideal for it. So I still think the lowest common denominator is the safest choice.
It is.
Because you can sort of force it into whatever role you need it to, at least.
Exactly.
Cheesy garlic bread a valid answer?
I mean,
if so, no contest.
Oh, really?
I mean,
really? See, that sounds like
so you're giving up like PB&J because you're not making PB&J with cheesy garlic bread. That would be disgusting. Like, okay, there's certain things you got to give up. You got to give up French toast. You want cheesy garlic bread French toast?
This is such the young man's answer. Like, just give me cheesy garlic bread, and I will dine on that every day without thinking through the repercussions. Like, you can't make French toast with cheesy garlic bread. All right,
walk me through it, Katie. No, listen. This response, this negative backlash, tells me that you guys have not had great cheesy garlic bread.
Katie. Trust me. Look at me. I've had my fair share of bread all around the world and many different kinds. I love a good cheesy garlic bread, but you got to think this is the long term. So I'm saying though, are you genuinely willing to give up those other things that we talked about? Or are you going to make cheesy garlic bread PB&J? I don't think you can do that.
I mean, well, let's be honest. I don't know shit about bread. I don't know what type of bread is used in cheesy garlic bread. If I knew, I would just say, give me that kind of bread so that I can elevate it to cheesy garlic bread.
Okay.
That's what I think. You could turn any of these types of bread into a garlic cheesy infused bread.
Right. Like a nice French baguette generally is bread for garlic bread. But like, yeah, you can do a lot of stuff with it. That's what I mean. Like, okay. So to be fair to what you're saying, like a piece of white bread is not ideal to make cheesy garlic because it's just not going to have the same. But you could still do it. It would be a low tier, you know, it's almost like it would be a low tier version of that, but you can always add to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas it would
definitely
you can't
be like a
really
poor man's cheesy garlic bread, for sure.
Yeah.
It would be great.
I don't know, man. Anything but the best cheesy garlic bread is just living a lie, to be honest. Okay. I don't know if I could live with myself.
I mean, the thing is, do you realize, like, you don't strike me as someone capable of making exotic bread-based dishes. So you're gonna give up. I'm just saying, you're gonna give up the ability to make, like, a PB&J or, like, a turkey and cheese. Just something basic. You're going to give up that option, which you are capable of, because you want cheesy garlic bread, something you probably are not capable of without assistance?
The internet is a powerful resource. All I have to do is Google how to make great cheesy garlic bread. I'm set. I don't care what my body becomes. I don't care what people think of me. I'm chilling. I'm eating delicious garlic bread.
God, that's incredible.
I don't know. I know how ignorant I'm sounding.
All right. But, well, hey.
No, you listen, just, I mean, just... look, if you love cheesy garlic bread that much, then by all means, base your choice on it. I'm just trying to get you to kind of, you know, think about the repercussions of the rest of your life. You're going to be, you know, 70, 80 years old. And, you know, and your wife is going to, she's going to say, oh, honey, do you want a sandwich? And you're going to say, nope. Sorry, you can't do a PB&J on this cheesy garlic bread.
making like meatball subs
every time. You get so sick of it.
You would become immune to the taste of cheese and garlic because it would just, you would have to deal with it in every single sandwich you eat.
Every time. every time.
Well, here's the thing. What if I'm trying to ruin cheesy garlic bread for myself because I know it's just so bad for your body? Like, hey, if I have enough of this, then I'll just refuse to eat it. Then I'll. How do I quit the addiction? I just have so much of it.
But in this scenario, you get to choose to quit the addiction because you can no longer have that kind of bread.
Oh, you're... Wow, well played. Yeah, right. My response is bullshit by that. But yeah, I mean... Okay, so I would just say, you know, what bread makes the best cheesy garlic bread? Okay, go with that bread. What is it, white bread? I honestly do not know. Like, what is the premium bread? I'll go with that.
I mean, Scott was saying, like, maybe a, you know, a baguette or something, like...
Right.
Something, yeah. Something that's got...
A French loaf, like, you know, like, baked, like, yeah, that you slice, like, generally make really good. I mean, you can make it out of anything, but yeah, I think generally you're going to go with something like that. Okay. But...
Because, you know, honestly, I know we're going back to the, you know, old Katie, the millennial boy. Like, when I eat bread,
is that like a recurring thing where we say that you're a millennial boy in, like, a weird voice tone?
Oh, well, you know, maybe not in that voice, maybe not in that context, but you know what I'm saying, Brandon.
Did you just create your own recurring section? Like, is this the first time?
No, I didn't. There's the he's young, he's an impressionable youth. And next question. I don't even remember what I was trying to say anymore. I just want to eat good bread. And like, right. What I'm saying is when I eat bread, it's no questions asked. So I'm not knowledgeable enough. And so I'll go with the most capable bread.
Okay. So he's going to defer again. He's basically deferring to our answer of a bread, you know, something that's pretty basic that we can add or detract, like, you know, we can add to basically. The base is simple. Like a white burger or a wheat bread.
I need to do this right now. How good of like a keybind, like a text keybind in CSGO?
Oh,
you don't
God,
strike
yes.
me as someone capable of making exotic bread based dishes.
I'm doing it right now.
Like, that's what I'm doing immediately.
That is such a good CSGO spam bind.
Oh, man.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, that's good.
All right. Well.
Wow.
All right. Well, what a question from Lewis. Thank you.
What a well-formed question, too.
Very well.
I appreciate you giving us some boundaries.
Yeah. It's very solid. All right. Well, we got one more email, and it is from our very own Love Muffin, who has been working, of course, on the novelization of a KB Mod screenplay based on the novel Push by Sapphire, a choose-your-own-adventure book anime. But I think this time he's still working on it. So until he has the next part, he has sent us this. This is called Historical Debate, the title of the email. And he said, "Hey, KB Schmoes, I regret to inform you that there has been some debate in the KB Mod historical community. The biggest point of contention being the veracity of the novelization of the KB Mod screenplay based on the novel Push by Sapphire, a choose-your-own-adventure book anime. Critics of its truthfulness call it an apocryphal text and say things like a choose-your-own-adventure book can't be canon by its very definition, or there was an actual record in the form of a podcast. Anyway, while these claims are being investigated, I recently discovered in episode 230, at the four-minute mark, Brandon posts the need for a KB Mod historian to dig up the funniest moments from the podcast archives. I volunteer for this role. My first excavation is from episode... Yeah, that's a good man.
Thank you.
My first excavation is from episode 144, which has a particularly lit question and answer section. At minute 130, a listener named Italicize, actual spelling undetermined, asks, if you had to use a game title to describe your last poop, what would you choose?
Scott, you have a great answer for this one.
Oh, I do, because I already have my answer because of what happened tonight to me before the cast. I personally think this was an amazing question, and I'm curious what your answers today would be. My answer is 50 Cent Blood on the Sand.
That's a good one. I think Lawbreakers is a good one.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. God, what did you do?
Wait, can you give us some context for that? Like, is it because it was smaller than you thought it would be?
No, it's so huge that it's above regulation size.
And it just, okay,
shatters the toilet. That's where my mind went.
You thought it was going to be huge, but it turned out to be pretty small.
Some of these are good. Some of these are good in chat. I had to give shout outs. Bob Walrus said The Evil Within. Kevin said CSGO. That's pretty good.
Okay. I like just Doom is a good one.
Splatoon. For me, my answer is simple. I'll tell you, I had Taco Bell tonight before getting on the cast.
So I have a guess.
My answer is Heavy Rain. Heavy Rain is what happened.
Oh, man, that's so
it was
good.
Not solid in any form. It
I was going to guess Super Hot.
Oh, Super Ooh. Hot would also work. Super Hot. Would work.
Brink.
Brink.
Or Gigantic.
Oh,
I wish Gigantic. I remembered our answers from the last time the question was asked.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would be interesting.
Down oh, well.
Dirty Bomb. Dirty Bomb is so good.
Perfect.
198.
That's so good.
Yeah, there's lots. Man. This is a great question because there really are unlimited answers.
Killing from Max Payne. Quake. Oh man. Oh, this is one of the best questions. I mean, it's there's so much good humor from it.
Oh, it's great. Poop titles
System
are...
Shock.
Oh god, World of Doom
will never not be great. Oh. Wow. Yeah, that was good. See, there you go. Okay, so I think Love Muffin gets the job because he's already found some gold, right? Just digging up that old question.
Yeah, we'll
so.
Go ahead and take down that job posting since he's volunteered for it.
That's really good.
I think I would go, my answer here would be a game we just recently learned about tonight on the podcast, Call of Nightmare.
Call of Nightmare?
Oh, man.
Jesus.
I was kind of in a rush to get home for that particular reason today, so I'm going to go with Door Kickers.
Door Kickers?
Oh, dang. I'm just scrolling through like top sellers on Steam, and I see Rim World. I just think that's the name of the arena of your toilet. It's just Rim World.
Oh, man.
Damn. Good question.
Good. Great question.
Yeah, it really is good.
And I look forward. So, again... Love Muffin is trying to, you know, he's looking into the points of contention of, you know, critics calling it an apocryphal text. So we'll
maybe
see.
That may be why happens. He hasn't had a chance to actually get back to writing it, because he's been having to deal with these critics coming out. And honestly, these critics coming out of the woodwork and trying to critique an unfinished work. I mean, it's not done. And they're already coming out and investigate, trying to call shenanigans on the truthfulness. So
exactly.
I mean, it's a shame, but you know, I guess that can slow down the writing process when, you know, you're having to respond to dozens of emails every day, people asking for comments on, you know, on this issue and having to deal with the PR. Gotta be a nightmare.
Definitely. Well, we appreciate you, Love Muffin. Thank you for this email, and yep, you're hired, and we look forward to you working out these claims or investigating them and getting back to us. So thank you for your continued support and writing. So, all right, guys, this would be the section where we read the iTunes podcast review of the week. But guess what? We do not have one this week. So if you would like to be the next person to have your review read, it's very simple. You open up iTunes. You search KB Mod. You'll see the KB Mod podcast come up very quickly. You will click on write a review. You will leave a review of 5 stars. That is the one requirement. The review must be 5 stars because that is what this podcast is worth, not a star less. In the field of the review, you can put in anything that you want. You could ask us a question. You could tell us how much you love the cast, what it's meant to you, the lives it's saved, the things that, how it's ruined your life. I'm sure some people feel like this is, you know, it's the opposite of helpful. That's fine too. Happy to hear about that. But yeah, do that. And then if we like what you wrote, we might read it during the section of the cast if we have one. So always feel free to leave us a review. We do love them. You can, of course, check out kbmod.com. Check out that review of Ruiner that is up there by Suros, a really good video review. Use the multi-stream, get involved with the forums. You know, check out the build guides, which have been made pretty recently by Brandon himself. And get involved in the community that way. We, of course, have other streams here during the week on twitch.tv/KBMod, so you can check those out. Is there a stream schedule that's out on the website? I think there is.
I think it may be a little bit out of date, but I saw recently they were going to update this.
Okay.
We do have, streams pretty often, though, at least a few a week.
But there are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few a week, so you can always check out if you're an audio listener and want to ever check out the stream and not just listen to the audio and see, you know, some KBMod members' beautiful faces, you can do that. But yeah, guys, thanks so much. I think that's going to do it for us. Thanks so much for joining us for episode 296.
Where can they follow the cast members, Scott?
That's a great point. They can follow KBMod Gaming on Twitter at KBMod Gaming. They can follow KDZen at KDZen _. They can follow Yingity Yang at Yingity Yang. Let me try this.
Oh, gosh.
No, here you go. I can just read it. YINGITYYANG. There you go. Yingity Yang. Yang. You can follow Volition at Volition, VOL1TION. And of course, I am at APL Fisher. And so give us a follow, send us a message. You know what? I might not respond to it, but I'll probably hit the little favorite button as I use that to just let people know that I've seen their tweets. Maybe I'll respond. Maybe Katie Zen will respond. Yeah, you know what? I try.
Does that imply that if someone sends you a tweet and you don't like it, that
I didn't see it?
You actually didn't see it?
No, sometimes I won't do it just if I don't like the tweet. So okay, that's true.
Right. Maybe so it's actually so when you don't like it, that is actually an affirmative that you did not like what they tweeted at you.
Sometimes it's very possible I may not have seen it too, but again, that just keeps you on toes. Maybe he saw it, maybe he didn't.
Okay,
you know, you never know. Maybe I didn't like it.
It's kind of like when someone doesn't respond to your message on AIM after a while. Exactly. It's like, are they actually there?
Oh gosh, no!
How we started,
and there we go. The great.
Full circle. Yep.
The great circle. The full circle. All right. All right, guys. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Farewell.